Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. It is January 16th, 2009, Friday. I've been with you all week. My name is Jason Burmes. I'm a filmmaker and do a little talk radio here and there. Don't worry, Alex will be back. I believe he's going to be doing the Sunday show, but don't quote me on that. He'll definitely be back Monday morning, and it's been a real pleasure sitting in all week. Some of our great guests, and we're going to have great guests today. Ted Anderson coming on in about 30 minutes. We're going to have Peter Dale Scott, author of The War Conspiracy, which was one of the first books to be banned in this country. Talked about parapolitics. He writes a lot of op-ed pieces, has recently done one over at 911truth.org, and it's a long one. It's all on the bailout and martial law. So we're going to be talking to him about that. We have Webster Griffin Tarpley later in the day. He's got two books out on Obama, and of course we're working on the Obama film here at the Info Warrior Studios in Austin, Texas. And we're also going to have the international forecaster Bob Chapman on later in the day. Now, we're making this Obama film, so we're trying to get as much Obama media as possible. And last week when I got here, the story broke that Obama was going to be on the cover of Spider-Man. Well, let me tell you how hard it is to get a copy of this thing. It hit the stands on Wednesday, and we tried to get it yesterday, Thursday, and it was sold out everywhere. I went on eBay, and the cheapest, let me repeat this, the cheapest that you can get this comic book for, this Obama book, Obama Spidey, is about $80. You can get it for $80. It got printed a week and a half ago, shipped out, and it just hit the newsstands yesterday. A lot of people are hoarding it. You know, you don't see them much in your local CVS or Rite Aid or drugstore anymore. They're only usually in comic book shops. And, of course, you know, all the little comic book geeks out there bought 10 copies or 100 copies, and they all threw them up on eBay, and now we'll have to wait for a second or third printing. But it's actually made headlines. Spider-Man comic starring Obama sells out in record numbers nationwide. See, that's what people don't tell you. The more there are, the less it's going to be worth. So in the long run, this comic book's probably not going to retain any value. But, you know, since people are still in love with this image of Obama, now's the time to gouge people. Obama Man does whatever a spider can. Marvel Comics said it plans to print a second and third round of the latest Spider-Man comic book after the issue, which features President-elect Barack Obama, sold out in record numbers Wednesday. Just hours after hitting the stands, the company expects to be the industry's best-selling comic in over a decade. In over a decade. Wow. That should really speak to the cult-like status of Barack Obama. The plot unfolds when Spider-Man's alter ego, Peter Parker, who attends the presidential inauguration as a news reporter, spots two identical Obamas just minutes before the new president is to give his inaugural address. Yeah, if you go online, you can see some of this. And the chameleon, I believe, is the villain. The web crawler springs into action and rescues Obama from the villainous imposter. The new president then thanks the superhero with a fist bump. That's right. He doesn't just fist bump his wife, ladies and gentlemen. Spidey. It's the hip president. We've got a hipster in. It's less of a political statement than it is of Spidey's fan made good, Wacker said. But Wacker said that he never expected the issue to sell out in less than a day. I didn't foresee the book was going into a second printing. That caught me by surprise. But it's the new president. No matter who it is, it's going to get attention. Yeah, it's not the same thing. If they had put Bush on the cover in 2001, before, or 2000, 2001, before the 9/11 attacks, I doubt it would have sold out. In fact, I promise you that it would not have sold out. So you listeners out there, any of you comic book geeks that bought like 10 copies, we'd appreciate you to mail us one so we don't have to spend $100 on it. News Blitz coming up. The FDA, of course, considering these genetically modified foods. No kidding. It's the Alex Jones Show. We'll be back after this. PrisonPlanet.com, Infowars.com.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
The FDA pledges openness on gene-altered products. No kidding. Federal health officials Thursday pledged a new open process for approving drugs and foods from genetically engineered animals. Consumer groups complain the policy won't do enough to tell people if they're eating gene-altered animals and fails to protect the environment. They urge the incoming Obama administration to reconsider it. They won't reconsider it. Don't worry. The real problem with this is that, of course, they're going to pass all this genetically modified food, and then it doesn't have to be labeled. Okay, so now they're telling you, don't worry, don't worry. The FDA is finally going to look into this. We're going to have that great genetically modified food. It's going to be delicious. They're going to make sure it's okay for you, but they're not going to label it. So, you know, have fun eating your cloned cattle and your genetically modified milk and cheese. It's outrageous. They are completely ignoring consumers' overwhelming desire for labeling, said Mike Hansen, a senior scientist with Consumers Union, publisher of Consumer Reports. FDA officials said genetically engineered foods will be labeled if they are different in some important way from natural foods. For example, non-fat filet mignon. No, Mark. Oh, by the way, this filet mignon is absolutely cloned and genetically altered. But if it's non-fat, we'll label it. Just get ready, folks. Nothing changed. I know everybody wanted to clamor for change and believe that this administration was going to bring in some kind of, like, superhero nonsense. I know everybody saw that Alex Ross painting of Obama as Superman. But that's fiction, okay? That's not true. He's another front man for the same globalists. Let's say globalist real slow together. Globalists. Internationalists. They're the ones that control Obama. In fact, UN to Obama, don't change Afghan strategy. And, of course, all these policymakers are chiming in now that Obama is saying, you know, we're going to redistribute our troops. He doesn't say redistribution. He says that we're going to have more troops in Afghanistan. Well, if they're leaving Iraq and they're going to Afghanistan, that's a redistribution of troops. UN to Obama, don't change Afghan strategy. Really? We shouldn't change the strategy in Afghanistan. We've almost been there for, let's see, it's got to be running 7.5 years, almost 8 years. Almost 8 years we've been in there, but don't do anything different, nothing. U.S. Vice President-elect Joe Biden, who toured the region earlier this month, said that things are going to get tougher in Afghanistan before they're going to get better. And that's because we're going to throw in a bunch of troops in there. We're going to say we're having the same quagmire-type problems that we had in Iraq, and we'll be stuck in the Middle East throughout the term of the Obama administration. A couple days ago, you may have remembered that I talked about Citigroup and how they had about 48 hours before they were totally and completely done. And I mentioned that their housing, their mortgage department had already been bought up by Morgan Stanley. Well, here it is. Citigroup post-loss splits up the bank. Okay, so it's further being decimated. It's pretty much gone. Citigroup said Friday it is splitting into two businesses as it has reported a fourth quarter net loss of $8.29 billion, its fifth straight quarterly loss. In Citigroup's reorganization, one business, Citicorp, will focus on traditional banking around the world, while the other, Citi Holdings, will hold the company's riskier assets. Right now, money is a risky asset. I don't know how much riskier it could possibly get. Folks, get your money out of Citibank if you've got it there. Go to another bank, please. I'm not going to try to sit here and promote Bank of America, but Chase Manhattan doesn't seem like it's going to go under. CEO Vikram Pandit, this is the woman they were saying they were going to get rid of in the article I read a couple days ago, move will allow Citigroup to sell or spin the Citi Holdings assets to raise cash. It also reveals the company's growing focus on back-to-basics lending and deposit gathering and dismantles the financial supermarket created a decade ago. Listen. There's just going to be more and more and more bad news. Bad news for Citigroup. Here, it looks like it's already being integrated with Chase Manhattan. Revenue fell 13% to $5.6 billion from a year ago. At its peak performance in the second quarter of 2007, Citigroup was pulling $25.8 billion in revenue. Citigroup used to be the largest bank by assets, but recently lost the title to J.P. Morgan, Chase, and Company, the Rockefeller banks. So more Rockefeller banks are coming up, and it looks like probably Citigroup will probably have to sell off to, you know, Chase Manhattan and J.P. Morgan. I can see that happening. More bad news, at least more bad economic news in the U.S. Circuit City to liquidate remaining U.S. stores. Now, they declared bankruptcy back in November, right before the holiday shopping season. But now it's over. They're going to just have to sell it all off. They're going to liquidate the remaining U.S. stores, which is over 500. Circuit City Stores Incorporated, the nation's second biggest consumer electronics retailer, the second largest one, wow, said Friday it had run out of options and will be forced to liquidate its 567 U.S. stores. The closures could send another 30,000 people into the ranks of the unemployed. This is the only possible path for our company, James A. Markham, acting chief executive, said in a statement. We are extremely disappointed in this outcome. Well, when you're competing against Walmart that sells TVs, you know, $1 to $500 cheaper for the same model, and you can't keep up with the market, and no one has money to be spending. I mean, it was the worst Christmas in years, folks. They don't have money to be buying these big televisions, these Blu-ray disc players, you know, a computer. They upgrade themselves every 6 months. You know, some people aren't buying those either. They're sticking with the computer they got 2 years ago. Of course you're going to go under. And we don't make anything in this country, so get ready for more retailers to go under. Circuit City is probably just the beginning. Just blitzing through the news right here. We covered this story a little bit yesterday and earlier in the week, but courts ruled that teachers can have sex with their 18-year-old students and not come under any scrutiny at all. They get to keep their jobs. Parents are outraged. And as well they should be. Whether or not you take this into a criminal prosecution, I mean, if the person is 18, I can see why you wouldn't do that. But the guy should lose his job. He should at least be relocated. Although relocation probably won't do much. He'll do it with another student. But, you know, this guy walked away. He beat the rap. He's a family guy, too. He had three kids. And the courts ruled, yeah, you can have sex with your 18-year-old kids, but kids that text each other, teenagers, 16 and 17-year-olds, naked pictures, you know, rambunctious teenage behavior, they're going to charge them. Yeah, they're going to charge them with child pornography. Unbelievable. You know, we played that clip yesterday. It was kind of mind-blowing. And Lee's like, oh, don't worry. We can't charge them with anything else other than child porn. But if they're convicted, they won't be on a sex offenders list. Really? I mean, something tells me that they probably will be on a sex offenders list and be forced to register, and it's absolutely, unbelievably ridiculous. First of all, it's ridiculous that we've gotten to the point where we're going to say, okay, teachers can have sex with their students as long as they're 18. No. This is somebody who's been in a position of power most likely throughout this person's teenage years, and sometimes their preteens. Somebody who's gained their trust, they have no business having a sexual relationship with a student, okay? Wait for them to graduate. Please. I'm begging you. It's just the twisted priorities of this country, man. I can't get over it. House Democrats propose $825 billion stimulus bill. See, the spending's not done. That bailout's just the beginning. House Democrats on Thursday unveiled details of an $825 billion plan designed to boost the sagging U.S. economy. The package is a mixture of a $550 billion in spending program and a $275 billion in temporary tax cuts. The Democrats hope will add 3 to 4 million new jobs to the American workforce. Doubt it. We wanted to get the biggest bang for our buck of every dollar spent, said House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Ugh, what a disgusting, wretched, vile woman she is. At $825 billion, the legislation would be one of the largest bills ever to have moved through Congress. And by traditional standards, lawmakers were moving with unusual speed. Pelosi and Senator Harry Reid, the Democrat from Nevada, the Senate Majority Leader, have pledged to have it ready for Obama's signature by mid-February. I'm sure it'll be early February. Why mid-February? Let's not wait a month for the man to be inaugurated. We're 4 days away, folks. 4 days away. And don't worry, you can catch it on ESPN. Of course, Republicans are in an uproar. They're not part of the process. More WWE politics on the floor. I guarantee that this almost trillion-dollar stimulus package or something similar or exactly like it will be passed, and we will be the ones holding the bag. We're the ones paying the bills. That's right. You pay taxes? You got a job? Yeah, we're paying for this, just like we're paying for the criminal bailout. In fact, criminal bailout, that's another headline. Where is that? People are finally asking the right question. Conservatives ask, is bailout unconstitutional? Of course it's unconstitutional. Dick Armey, the former Republican House Majority Leader, addresses the media at the Republican National Convention in 2008. And now, I guess, now that their boy's not in, now they're going to say, oh, this is just terrible. This is out of the New York Times, by the way. While much of the debate over the $700 billion federal bailout plan has focused on whether the money is being spent wisely or well, concerns are growing among many conservatives about its constitutionality. Remember, they had to threaten many of the Republicans who didn't want this with martial law before passing it. Some conservatives have argued that the law creating the program, the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008, which Congress passed hastily in October, violates the constitutional principles that limit the amount of power that lawmakers can delegate to the executive branch. Wow. There it is. Checks and balances. Let's read that last sentence again. Which Congress passed hastily in October violates the constitutional principles that limit the amount of power that lawmakers can delegate to the executive branch. That's right, three branches of government, folks. And we're supposed to limit that power. Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv. I'm Jason Burmes. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain.
It's the only thing that's real. All right, folks, we're back. It is the Alex Jones Show. We are blitzing through the news. And I'm glad I get to blitz through the news. I really haven't had a big chance to do this while I have guests on, and usually the first hour is when I get all this stuff in. It's out of the New York Times. We're just going over it. Conservatives ask if bailout is unconstitutional. Well, of course it's unconstitutional. We'll get to that in a second, but I want to thank one of our very great sponsors, probably my favorite sponsor. I probably shouldn't be playing favorites, but the Ecola Blue machine here is just 110% delicious, folks. Taking water from thin air and then purifying it. It doesn't get any better than that. You can get it cold. You can get it hot. You're making some tea. Good. Hit the hot button. It's amazing. It's very cheap. Literally, you pay for it in a year if you buy a bottle of water. And that's even if you're buying the low-grade stuff. You don't even have to spend a ridiculous amount. The website to go to is www.ecolablue.com. That's ecolablue.com. ecolablue.com. Or you can call the toll-free number at 866-585-4044. That's 866-585-4044. I also want to remind people that there is a seminar going on today and this weekend. First, it's in Fredericksburg, Texas. It's being put on by the Heartland Emergency Group. Heartlandemergency.com is the website. The seminar includes speakers like Big John Lipskin, of the host of Don't Tread on Me. And basically, we're going to be speaking about self-preparedness. What happens in the case of emergency? How do you use your freeze-dried foods? How do you use these seeds? And this is going to be at 6 p.m. tonight in Fredericksburg at the Ag Building at 95 Frederick Road, and Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. in Austin, Texas at Brave New Books, 1904 Guadalupe Street. If you need to call somebody about the information, is 512-921-9015. That's 512-921-9015 or 9016. Remember, that's heartlandemergency.com, and we got seminars going on the next 3 days. All right. So what's unconstitutional? Well, I mean, all right, first of all, the Independents knew off the bat Robert A. Levy, an intelligible principle that provided clear guidance to an agency or a regulator, but that, he said, is precisely what is missing from the bailout. In other words, there is no intelligible principle. We just said, here you go, print as much as you like, hide it all, buy up infrastructure. Now, even Dick Armey, you know, hardcore Republican, former Republican House Majority Leader, said this: when Congress delegates so much authority to the executive branch with so few rules to guide its discretion, Congress unconstitutionally transfers its lawmaking power to the executive branch. And that's what we've done. We've given the executive branch just an insane amount of control over our finances. And get ready to take it hard, folks. Again, you know, we're 4 days away from the inauguration. I don't know if we're going to put any credence into what, you know, Biden and Powell and Albright have said about, you know, the inaugural crisis, Obama's inaugural crisis. I think it's here. Could it get worse? You bet it could get worse. So, you know, the best way to protect yourself, folks, is to get your fiat currency out of the bank and get hard currency, you know, gold and silver. A lot of people are like, well, you know, you want to make some money on it. But no, this is about security. This is about having something that is going to retain value no matter what happens to the economy in the United States. Gold and silver will retain value in other markets. I promise you. It's a worldwide market, and it's not based on something that's not backed by anything, the U.S. economy. So, you know, gold and silver are the way to go. We're going to have Ted Anderson on of Midas Resources after the break. I do want to report a little bit of good news. Can you imagine that? Some good news? Ex-officer pleads not guilty in BART shooting. Now, you know, we covered this on the program earlier in the week. Guy in Oakland in the subway system, held down by police officers and really gunned down in cold blood by Jonas Messerly, I believe is his last name. You know, some young cop, younger than I am. And he decided to pull the trigger, kill the guy. Oh, don't worry, the cameras didn't work. Everything's okay. People caught it on their cell phone cams. The guy was forced to resign, and now he is being held in police custody and finally going to be charged in the murder of this gentleman. This is out of Oakland, California, CNN. Former police officer for the Bay Area Transit System pleaded not guilty Thursday in the New Year's Day shooting of a passenger on an Oakland rail station. Well, let's hope and pray he gets convicted. This is the Alex Jones Show. You can get all of the InfoWars news over at InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.tv. We will be back with Ted Anderson of Midas Resources after the break.
Federal agents, we are armed!
What would you do if you knew all the things we know?
We have more than 100% of illegal
firearms. And then what if you saw all of the things that's wrong? Would you stand tall and strong? Or would you turn it off?
All right, folks, we are back. It is the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burma, sitting in for Alex Jones all week. Don't worry, Alex will be back. This is my final program here. I'm sure you guys miss him. Conservatives ask if the bailout is unconstitutional. A little late, don't you think? Of course it's unconstitutional. And the House Dems are now proposing an $825 billion stimulus bill. We've got Circuit City liquidating today. We've got Citigroup in more problems, probably going to be selling itself off into other banks. So what do you do? How do you protect yourself? Well, we have Ted Anderson of Midas Resources on the line to really let you know how to protect yourself. Ted, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's good to be up here again. I'm really appreciating you stepping in for Alex there. I miss him. He calls me about every day, and we talk about this and that, and I'm just calling him and leaving messages on his voicemail now, just saying, yep, I tested all your streams. Everything's up, running strong. Just want to let you know. I hope you're enjoying your vacation. I can tell you right now, working with Alex for the 12 years that I have, he has such a tough time taking a break. I mean, to take a vacation and be with his kids and his wife, and in this case, his mom and dad, just is it's killing him. Even though he knows he needs to be there and he loves him very much, he just can't stop working. This guy just is just a working machine, and that's why he's where he is today. But you're right about that. I was pulling the same stories up right now. Merrill Lynch's losses are digging into Citigroup so hard that they may even need to be liquidated. They're talking about another bailout for them. Mm-hmm. And Circuit City is shutting down the rest of their stores, so Circuit City is going to be no more. One of the big things that happened here in the Twin Cities is the Minneapolis Star Tribune, a $500 million company, is folding. Not folding, I should say. They're going into bankruptcy. And you're hearing it all over the place. I mean, GM, Chrysler, everybody knows about that. But you have the regional companies that are struggling right now on everybody's market. There are just so many layoffs. I mean, the unemployment came out with the numbers were just astronomical. The foreclosures on homes is up 81% from last year. I mean, there's just so many things that are going on, and the bailouts just keep on coming. Oh, by the way, the people that are interested, the Creature from Jekyll Island spot will start airing on Rush Limbaugh's show. Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, and also George Norrie. That's starting February 2nd, so listen for those. It'll be great to get a little bit of New World Order information to that audience. And then Dr. Laura, she started yesterday. So we're working on it. We're working on it. I mean, the way I see it, Jason, if we do nothing, we're going to get world government. This Constitution is practically gone already. As far as I'm concerned, there's not going to be a shred of it that's left unless we're willing to stand up and fight. As far as what do I have to offer, I did some inventory searching to see what prices and so on and so forth I paid for this stuff, because gold is up today. It's shooting up today. It's up at about $830 an ounce. It's been up as high as about $835. Mm-hmm. And I just double checked to see what I have. I had some British sovereigns and francs left at that 770 level. And I priced them out to see where I'd have them at. And right now, currently, I have the franc at 202, which is, again, it's a fifth of an ounce of gold. And we have the British sovereign currently right now at 250, which is a quarter of an ounce of gold. Now, the reason why I think that it's important to get into those is, first of all, they're small coins. They're coins from the late 1800s and early 1900s, mostly the 1800s. And so it's a very old gold coin, and a lot of dealers like to make the argument that you have to have pre-1933 gold. Well, this is. Mm-hmm. The francs currently right now, if I price them at today's market, it would be 212, and I'm currently right now selling them at 202, mm-hmm. and the British sovereign is at 259, and I'm currently selling that one at 250. Again, I really think it's very important to have silver. Small pieces of silver are going to be buying the food, the clothing, the things that you need, and they're at $8.40 or $168 per roll. And for those of you, I know there's probably a few left out there that don't know this yet, but I've been advertising the Creature from Jekyll Island book for the last 12 years on Genesis Communications Network, and we were charging $26.45 all the way back in 1996, going into 1997. Well, guess what? I'm still charging $26.45 for the thing. I guess it was a little cheaper because postage went up, but we're putting a silver dollar inside of each cover of the book. We just put them in a little flip. We staple it inside the cover. It's the same thing I'm doing on the Rush Limbaugh show. I'm really trying to get the message out there. Silver dollars right now, you can even look on eBay. They're at the lowest, if you're lucky to win an auction, you might get them for $18, $19.
Yeah, but then you have the shipping. I go on there all the time, actually, to price out silver and gold. And just like you said, you're not going to get an ounce of silver for less than $20 with shipping, no doubt about it. And really, with gold, you're going to spend over $1,000 on a one-ounce coin there, no problem also, plus shipping. I mean, eBay, you sell really under what things usually go on eBay for.
Well, yeah, and typically eBay is a garage sale, too. People are just trying to get rid of their odds and ends, and you're going to be piecemealing it, too, and you really don't know who you're buying from either. So, mm-hmm. But the thing about it is that Creature from Jekyll Island book does give you a full education on the Federal Reserve System and also central banks across the world. You need to know how the monetary system works, because that's the machine that is financing the elite. That, I mean, you know, in your DVD, Loose Change, you know, you talk about the World Trade Center coming down and who pulled the strings behind this, and such a great documentary. But the fact of the matter is that the elite are getting money right now because we're laboring and we're turning it over through taxation and interest on debt. And the further we go into debt, I mean, you're talking about another bailout. Well, guess who benefits from that? The people that benefit are the lenders. The people who are actually able to lend the money to the people that we the people of the United States have to take on in order to bail out these companies that are supposedly too big to fail. The further we go into debt, the more we owe interest. The profitability just shoots up through the moon for these people that are lending it. And the catch is that they don't even have to earn the money to lend it to us. They actually get it for free from us again. We go out there, we grow the cotton that is used at the Bureau of Engraving out in Washington, D.C. They print the money, and then they ship it off to the Federal Reserve System, and then they lend it back to us for interest. And we just, you know, the interest burden is just continuing to get bigger and bigger, and that's why we have to work so much harder, pay so much in taxes. You know, it takes a mom and dad to work now, where back in the 50s it only took dad. And now, you know, if things keep going on, they'll probably have to give up the child labor laws, because we'll have to have our kids working too in order to eat. And that's just not the way that America was designed to run. So if you're looking at something, if you want to understand the system and how it really works, pick up that Creature from Jekyll Island. You're going to get the silver dollar that's worth $20. You're going to end up paying $26.45. The book is 600 pages, but it reads like a whodunit novel. It's very interesting. And then when you're done reading it, keep the silver dollar. Pass the book on to somebody who needs to read it. Tell them where they can get one of their own. Anyways, at this particular time, I got to say, Jason, probably the best buy in the marketplace are those sovereigns. Mm-hmm. Either that, or if you don't have a whole lot of money, and I truly recommend this. If you don't have silver, please get silver now. There's too many problems out there in the economy, and you have to do something. That will be those walking Liberty halves at $168 per roll of 20.
That's an amazing deal. Why don't you throw out the website and the phone number, Ted?
Yeah, the website is MidasResources.com, and you can get in touch with us at 1-800-686-2237. Again, that's 1-800-686-2237. And boy, I can't wait till that Info Warrior is back here in town. We need him.
I know it, and you're so right. Alex is so juiced up to do this stuff. It is hard for him to take a vacation. He called me last night. You know, he checks in every day, you know, how's the movie going? How's the office? Are the callers treating you okay? I mean, he really does keep up on this. And that's great, because we need somebody motivated every day to be on the air 4 hours a day to report on things like the bailout, to report on the fact that, you know, this stimulus package is just going to put us into further debt, to report on the fact that these banks are going to go under and we're going to be left holding the bag. So, you know, I can't wait for Alex to get back myself. You know, Ted, what do you think is going to happen? You know, I might as well get your perspective on this on Inauguration Day. A lot of people are talking about an inaugural crisis on the 21st or 22nd. I mean, is it just going to be an announcement that the economy has tanked, you know, twice as badly as we think?
Well, I mean, Obama's already talking about, you know, he's backpedaling on how much he can give away and so on and so forth. I don't know if we're going to have a crisis that very day he's inaugurated, but I can tell you right now, he's got... you know, he's got an uphill battle. I mean, really, if we could convince Obama that we need to get rid of this banking system and get back to constitutional money, and if he'd pick up his ears a little bit and listen to the few voices out there that the Ron Paul type voices, Dennis Kucinich type voices in Congress, we might be able to get somewhere, but we both know that that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Obama, you look at his cabinet, it's going to be just like the Clinton era. You know, there's going to be no attention paid to the true economic problems that we have in this world. It's just going to be an awful lot more bailouts, a lot more money being printed, and we're going to start running into double-digit inflation. And for all I know, you know, the next war, I know he's talking about beefing up things in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. and who knows, you know, what's going to be laid out in front of us. But, you know, this Gaza Strip thing is a big issue out there right now. I just don't know which one's going to play out.
Yeah, I hope that we don't end up entangled in another war in the Middle East. I hope it's just financial. But you never know with these people. You know, all they need is a certain event, and we'll clamor to go into Pakistan or into Iran or wherever they really want us to go. Ted, why don't you give out the number and the website again for the Midas resources?
Yeah, well, let me just add in one more thing before I do that. I mean, one of the things that you got to consider right now is that the way that the Federal Reserve System gets money into the system is by making loans. And right now there isn't enough creditworthy borrowers, and the ones that are creditworthy aren't interested in taking on a lot of debt. And that's why we're seeing what I would call deflation, because they can't get the money into the system. It's like trying to push a string. You can't force money on people, especially when it's in terms of people taking on more debt. And so they're pushing really hard for the United States government to replace all the private sector debt and get this economy moving that way. But this thing's going to blossom out. I really see just more and more money coming into the system through the process of credit. And that's when you get into the hyperinflationary thing like we have down in Argentina, Brazil, Mexico. The website Midas Resources Incorporated, the telephone number 1-800-686-2237. If you haven't picked up your copy of That Creature from Jekyll Island, get it now. I know Alex is advertising it all over the place because he feels passionate about it as I do. And you can catch us at 1-800-686-2237. And Jason, we will hold these prices clean through the weekend. I know the show will replay all the way through to the Sunday show when Alex is actually in the seat running at the helm. So
yes. That's excellent, and like you said, it's going to run all weekend. Ted locks in the prices. You can get it cheaper than really anywhere else. Like I said, go check online on these auction sites. You can't do as well. And silver and gold, it's almost essential to have at this point with this very, very, very uncertain economy. The only thing certain about this economy is that it doesn't look like it's going to be shaping up into anything good in the next few years. I mean, it really looks like we're going to be struggling through this entire administration. I don't know how we're going to get out of it. You know, I'm sure they're going to propose a bunch of new social programs, but that's really not going to help the country, is it, Ted?
No, it's not. We have way too much debt, and we don't have enough productivity. We've shipped out all our jobs are shipped overseas. We're not a country of savers anymore. We deficit spend. People want to get away from their credit cards now, and that just kills the whole process with the Federal Reserve System. Maybe that's a good thing, but unfortunately, a lot of people are unemployed. And I think we're going to see an awful lot more, and it's not good news. And you should be getting out of debt yourself personally as quickly as you can. And if you do have a little bit of money left over, get some food and make sure you have your shelter covered. Cover your children for whatever it is that they need. And then if there's money left over after that, pick up some gold and silver.
All right, Ted, thank you so much. And remember, folks, this is how you really, really have insurance. This is the real deal insurance. You have insurance in gold. You have insurance in silver. You have insurance in storable food in case something happens. I mean, like I said, with this Circuit City liquidation, we're looking at 30,000 more unemployed people. And that's from Circuit City. You know, if Citigroup goes under, God knows how many people are going to lose their jobs. You know, again, they're proposing an $825 billion with a B stimulus bill, which will turn into trillions just like the $700 billion bailout did. Remember, when you give the banks billions and billions of dollars in fiat currency, and it's not even real, they'll lend out 10 to 100 times more of that. So that's why you have Bloomberg reporting that it's really 7 to 8 trillion. Things don't look good. You know, I like to be a pretty positive guy. I'm a pretty upbeat fella, but financially, the economic situation in this country is just, it's deplorable right now. And you don't have to be Jason Burmes to say so. You can be somebody who's been in the middle upper class, and all of a sudden your car payments on your three cars, you can't make them. And all of a sudden the college bill of your two sons and your daughter is getting out of control, and you're going into more and more debt. You have no savings. It's a rough time right now. We're going to have Bob Chapman of the InternationalForecaster.com coming up at the top of the hour. Let's take a few calls. Let's jam through a few calls on any of the News Blitz or Ted Anderson that we just talked about in the first 45 minutes. Let's go to Bear in California. I get the best names on this show. Bear, what's happening?
How you doing, Jason? Excuse my voice. I'm a retired Air Force vet, and I still work with the military, and I used to listen to Alex Jones on the radio, and I was like, didn't really take him serious, and then I stopped listening to him, and I'm like, hey, whatever happened to that Alex Jones, because they kind of took him off the radio station I used to listen to.
Sure.
So I did some research, and I browsed, and he's on the internet. So I checked out his internet site. I said, oh, you can listen to him on the internet, and I sit at a desk a lot, so I started taking him more serious. and I kind of like woken up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you are conscious of what's going on and what's reality of really what's going on in this country and what's going on in this world, it, excuse my language, it pisses you off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do something about it. I'm starting a group up here in the high desert in California.
Excellent. What kind of group?
I don't know where the high desert is. But we're
going to
start it out as a gun group. You know, I have some friends that shoot at the range, and they're going to teach me how to shoot a gun, how to properly handle it, and all that. And what I also I'm going to do is I'm going to make my own business cards just so, and have Alex's websites on there and educate people and tell them what's really going on. And I've been doing that. I have no problem talking to people. I have the gift of gabbing, and like you do, Jason. And
it's an important gift, man. You have to talk to people, you know? That's how you reach out. One-on-one always works better than, you know, a lot of people are listening to me right now. Like you said, you know, when you used to listen to Alex Jones, you didn't take him that seriously. I'm sure there are people out there scoffing at what I'm saying. But you have to communicate with people. The gift of gab is a great gift. Indeed, when you're educated and you can wake up the masses. Bear, I thank you for the call. We're going to take a few more calls in the next segment. It is the Alex Jones Show, Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. The tip of the spear of the info war. It is the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burma sitting in all week. And don't worry, Alex Jones will be back, I believe, Sunday. You can't keep him away from the radio studios. We're going to go back to your calls in a moment. And by the way, with the calls, folks, if I cut you off, I'm sorry, but I have this long list of callers. You know, I've got to get them in. You know, every time I'm talking to you, I've got five more waiting. And then on top of that, I get two types of emails on my MySpace, usually. Usually, oh, I can't believe you cut me off, or, oh, I just couldn't get through to the show. It's kind of a conundrum. If I don't cut people off and give everybody their 30 seconds to 90 seconds on the air, then I can't have everybody come on, and I get a ton of emails, oh, I couldn't even get on the air. Well, we try to get everybody on the air. We try to get everybody's points in, whether you agree or disagree. Before we go back to calls, I do want to thank yet another one of our sponsors, eFoods Direct. That is eFoodsDirect.com, of course. And the number is 1-800-409-5633. Okay, so you don't have to remind you that you need food to survive. Our biggest sponsor, eFoods Direct, is the longest continually operating storable foods company in the country. They also happen to be true patriots and have supported the freedom movement for years and years. With the looming food shortages and current economy, the real deal. It is imperative that you make sure you and your family are prepared with non-GMO, good, clean, storable foods. That's eFoodsDirect.com, 1-800-409-5633, 1-800-409-5633. All right, let's jump to our next caller. Let's go to Paul in Colorado. Paul, what's on your mind?
Hey, Jason, you're doing an awesome job, by the way.
Oh, thank
Excellent.
You.
Nobody can do better at any age, really. Hey, listen, I've been listening to Alex for probably 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that he's always, I've heard him, he gets really frustrated. He's looking for an answer on a particular area. And it's, I'm telling you, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're, what church you go to, what Christian, who Christian group you are. Almost every single person out there never understands this one aspect, which if you give me a chance to say it right now,
go for it.
It could literally unlock a lot of doors for us. For the info war, or should I say for the fight of freedom.
Okay, go
this
ahead.
This is, okay, this mm-hmm. is that the war that we're really fighting, which is clearly put in the Bible, is a war they call principalities. That means a war between spirits, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there is an evil spirit that the satanic people are following. These mm-hmm. are the people that are trying to take us over.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're, of course, who are they fighting against mostly? Christianity and freedom and you know, goodness. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's how we can win against these people, and I hope your listening audience takes good note of this and doesn't scoff it too much and actually takes it to heart. But believe it or not, most of these people that are really evil are being puppeted by an evil spirit. Okay. Mm-hmm. No joke. There's actual evil spirits, and they're inside of people. And I've tested this for 20 years, more than 20 years personally, and I've helped other people to test it too. And everybody's been flabbergasted how true this is, okay?
Okay.
Why would you want to waste your time arguing with an evil spirit who is going to say, obviously, all the bad stuff, and is not going to listen to you, and never going to change anything that they do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? The rule of thumb is, here's the part that no one wants to believe, but the power of the name of Jesus Christ can actually cast these people out. Just like in the Bible, Jesus cast evil spirits
mm-hmm.
out. Well, I have taught my friends, and I've done it myself, that if you're arguing with somebody who's evil, you don't even waste your time. You go in the restroom, cast the devil out, you say, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command Satan and all his angels to leave this property, this house, at once.
All right, Paul, I got a break. I thank you for the call. Look, I'm not Mr. Religious, but there is that passage in Revelations where it talks about the mark of man and those who rule act like Christians, but are in fact into the occult. And I think that is very, very real. You know, good and evil do exist. It's the Alex Jones Show, InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. We are in the second hour on this Friday, January 16th, 2009. And we're going to have Bob Chapman, the international forecaster, on at 5 after the hour. We're going to take a couple more calls. But before we take your calls, and we'll take some calls on topic about the financial market with Bob Chapman in the second half of that interview. But I want to remind everybody that this weekend, and actually beginning tonight, Heartland Emergency, that's heartlandemergency.com, is going to be holding seminars on storable food, non-genetically modified food, heirloom seed, and also freeze-dried food. Speakers will include Big John Lipscomb, host of Don't Tread on Me. And this starts tonight, Friday night, January 6th at 6 p.m. in Fredericksburg at the Ag Building, 95 Frederick Road. Or tomorrow and Sunday, Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. at Brave New Books, 1904 Guadalupe Street. They are great over there at Brave New Books. If you can't get to heartlandemergency.com, you can call them up at 512-921-9015. That's 512-921-9015. All right, let's jump back into callers. Paul, I am not Mr. Religious. Again, I'm going to say it again. I'm pretty sure that Paul is gone, but I just want to talk to all those, listeners out there. I know that Alex has a huge Christian audience, and obviously good and evil do exist. And, these people do occult practices. I mean, no matter what you believe, they do go out to the Bohemian Grove in California for 2 weeks out of the year. Many of the elites, including, Reagan was a member, Nixon was a member, Clinton's a member, Schwarzenegger's a member, every Republican president since Coolidge is a member. And they do the cremation of care, which is a one-hour pagan ritual about killing dull care or your conscience, where they do a mock human sacrifice in front of a 40-foot stone owl. And so, people that still don't know that, just go to YouTube. Just Google Bohemian Grove. There is enough information out there that it can open your eyes. All right, let's go to Julio in Los Angeles. Julio, what's on your mind?
Hey, Jason. I've been listening to you all week, man, and I just want to say you're doing a great job filling in for Alex, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Don't take any you-know-what from no one.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should... those people that are hostile toward you have been listening to all the really weird phone calls you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Just cut them off, man. Let's leave the time that we have for all this important information for the people that want to be constructive. So you're doing a good job. I just wanted to say that Alex Jones and his program is helping me to get my life back in order.
Mm-hmm.
And all the information that he's been giving out is helping me to get my life in order and to start becoming more independent. So I'm not really physically fit right now, and I'm going to the beach about 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to your show. I put it on my MP3, and it really helps me and inspires me. So I just want to let you know that.
Well, thank you so much, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. Thank you very much. I just want to pass one little piece of information. Maybe it's a little piece of the puzzle that, you know, it's hard to predict the future, but there are certain pieces of the puzzle that kind of point in the same direction. I've been hearing you, you know, you yourself say you don't know what's going to happen on the 21st mm-hmm. of January or whatever, right, because of mm-hmm. colon. Basically, I don't know if you've ever heard this, and I'm going to email it to is it Aaron at Infowars.com?
Yep, Aaron at Infowars.com.
That's A-A-R-O-N?
Yep.
Okay. There is this thing called the SICA, the S-I-C-A. It's the mm-hmm. It's basically an organization that has existed for decades in Central America, you know, Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, sure. et cetera. Mm-hmm. And what they stand for is basically they've never taken any decisive actions for the most part up until December, mm-hmm. The 5th or the 6th of December of last year. Mm-hmm. All the dignitaries of all the countries in Central America, mm-hmm. they got together and they decided that they're going to adopt one common currency and one common passport.
Send that information to Aaron right away. It's the Alex Jones Show. We'll be back with Bob Chapman, PrisonPlanet.com, Infowars.com.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
All right, folks, we are back. It is the Alex Jones Show, and we'll take your calls at about 40, 45 after, and hopefully they'll be on topic with my next guest, Bob Chapman of the InternationalForecaster.com. And Bob, it's been a while, but boy, do we have a lot to talk about. I mean, from the Democrats now proposing an $825 billion stimulus bill to Circuit City about to liquidate to Citigroup, basically, not going under, but being absorbed by other banks and turning into different agencies. The economy is asunder, is it not?
Well, it certainly is, unfortunately. And it's a certain fact that Citigroup is bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And Bank of America is bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And the five major legacy banks are bankrupt. The major brokerage firms are bankrupt. And they're all going to get bailed out by the American taxpayer. And that's what we're going through right now. And it's insidious. They should be allowed to fail.
I absolutely agree, but they're not going to be allowed to fail. Now, you know, the media is hard-pressing us to make us believe that only half of this bailout money, which they say is $350 billion, we know it's in the trillions because it's loaned and loaned again, and it really is only $350 billion they can loan out, and that's, you know, they can loan out 10 times that, so it's $3.5 trillion right there. What's going to happen? I mean, are we just going to pass? I mean, Bernanke this week said that we're going to need more bailouts. Paulson, even in the beginning of the bailout process, said that some banks would go under anyway. Now we have, the new administration being inaugurated in about 4 days, the Democrats proposing a $825 billion stimulus package, and now finally in the mainstream media, a few quote-unquote conservatives, it's time for the WWE left-right paradigm to come into play, saying that these bailouts are unconstitutional. Well, no kidding they're unconstitutional, but how far are they about to go?
Well, I think they're going to take it to the very end, whether we like it or not. And we have no representation in our government, whether it's in the executive office or in Congress. We have no control. Very few of our representatives or senators listen. Mm-hmm. And so that part of the game is over. There's no way legally that we can change things in our government. Our government has been usurped from behind the scenes by a group of people who are bent upon turning the United States into a corporatist fascist state and eventually into part of a world government. Where do we think this is going? The Federal Reserve have driven down interest rates to zero levels, effectively. On the short end of the market, which is the paper under a year and under 2 years, they can probably get away with that for a long time, at least till the end of the year, perhaps more, mm-hmm. Perhaps longer. But in the 5s, 10s, and 30s, that is the 5- and 10-year notes and the 30-year bonds, it's a different story. And I think as the federal government crowds lenders out of the market and the fiscal and monetary aspects of the U.S. economy worsen over this year, that interest rates will finally start to go up on that long end. And that will really put a crimp again into the issuance of mortgages. Right now, you can get a 30-year fix for about 4.5, and the 15s are probably an eighth or a quarter lower. And I think that that would be curtailed later in the year, and that's going to cause problems. And during that period of time, over the next 9 months, the dollar is going to continue to lose momentum and move downward during that period as well. With all of this money being thrown around, gold will probably go this year at least to $1,600 to $2,000 an ounce and maybe higher. And later it'll go higher. And I see this extension of these problems lasting another 2 or 3 years. And this is what Alex and I and Paul Craig Roberts talked about. When Alex said, well, it's got to happen now or soon, as opposed to that, Paul and I said, no, 2 or 3 years. Now you know why. Now, they got a stimulus package, $825 billion. That'll jack the economy up probably between March and September, mm-hmm. and it'll go right back down again. And that means they're going to have to keep on coming with these trillion-dollar packages. Well, every time they do that, they're adding to inflation. And they're adding to the underlying problems of the solvency of not only the United States, but the dollar and the economy and the whole financial structure itself.
So you just said that after they pass the stimulus package that you'll see the economy boost from September to March. But my question is, how will that happen? I mean, if the auto industries by then, you know, they pretty much the bailout for them hasn't worked and they go public with that. How is it that the economy will do better even in those months if we put this money in? I mean, will it just do better on the news and people are still going to be feeling it at home? Or will we genuinely be doing better and then in for a big fall after March?
Generally doing better mm-hmm. between March and September. Mm-hmm. And after that's over, it'll start to go into the great dark pit again. Mm-hmm. And 3 or 4 months later, they're going to do it over again. They're going to have to keep on doing it. And what they're doing is they're creating make-work jobs. The same thing FDR did during the 1930s, mm-hmm. particularly between 1935 and 1940. And in 1939, unemployment was 17.2%, mm-hmm. Down for somewhere around 30. And today, long-term unemployment, that goes back to 1990, government figures, is 17.5%. Mm-hmm. The U6, which are the people who no longer collect unemployment checks, is 13.5%, and that dingbat number that we're given, which is 7.2, means nothing. So mm-hmm. if you middle the thing, we're already up at 13.5%. We've had 2 years of recession, and I announced the recession 2 years ago, about a week or 2 weeks from now in February, and we are now entering depression. This is the beginning. Or they call it a severe recession. No, it's not that. We're entering depression. Mm-hmm. And when will depression get really bad? 2 or 3 years from now. Everything doesn't happen overnight.
Well, you just talked about FDR and his program. So you see a new deal like Tarpley has talked about, or a resurgence of a Works Progress administration type program where people without jobs are going to start building infrastructure again, are going to start paving roads and building sidewalks and doing that sort of thing?
Yes, that will be part of the package. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's going to be more packages coming, because if you notice, the first package has been split up into pieces. Medicaid's going to get so much, education, and on and on. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's being segmented. It's being parceled out to different places. And that is not going to get them as many jobs. He's talking 4 or 5 million jobs now. Mm-hmm. He's out of his mind. I mean, if they create 500,000 jobs, they'll be lucky, you know, over a 9-month span here. And the jobs are working for the federal government or yeah. working for companies that are getting contracts from the federal government. They're all temporary work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe if they fix a road, maybe it'll become permanent, or a bridge. The Hoover Dam was made during the 1930s, and all those golf courses, and they're still around. but they don't create anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even in my town that I grew up in, you still see the WPA little metal plaques that are inside the sidewalks. So, you know, like you said, that's a 1930s program. They're still around in 2009. So you're right. It's only going to be a limited amount of jobs for a limited period of time. And then what happens? I mean, maybe they're figuring that we'll be in a world war by that time, so the economy will boost out when that's over?
Well, you stole my thunder. The next step that I was going to talk about was, if you look at history, the only way that they got to go is to have another war. And we're having a backdoor war right now. Our surrogate, Israel, has gone into Gaza and done what they've done. Mm-hmm. Now, next will be Lebanon and Syria and then Iran. And then we've got Afghanistan and we've got Pakistan. We probably have India. And who knows about the rest of the Middle East? So we're going to have a third world war. Nuclear weapons will be used. And this will go out for the next 10 years, probably.
Oh, my God. Well, I hope you're genuinely wrong on that, although I do see an escalation in the Middle East. You know, Obama is already talking about more troops in Afghanistan, which basically is a redistribution of forces as we leave Iraq. And we're not just going to completely leave Iraq, people. Believe me, we'll still have forces there. But the majority of forces will be brought over to Afghanistan. You know, the media will play it up into some kind of military quagmire over there. And we're not getting out. Just like you said, I mean, if you look at the chief of staff pick, Rahm Emanuel, dual Israeli and American citizen, calling for conscription of 18 to 25-year-olds where they'll serve 3 months in basic training and then be shipped off to a desert to fight for us, really just fight for the globalists. And that's scary to me because, you know, Tom Blankley, and we've been playing these clips all week, but Tom Blankley of the Washington Times, he's a editor of the editorial page there, in 2007 was all over the news talking about conscription, but said, you know, it wasn't going to happen under this Bush administration because enough people weren't going to get behind him. He didn't have the image to be able to propose such a program. However, he said in the next administration, and that's why this week he was on Fox and Friends promoting his new book called American Grit, where again he's calling for conscription, only this time under this administration he believes it's possible. And Bob, I got to tell you, you know, with the image that they're portraying Obama, I mean, he's on the cover of the new Spider-Man comic. The thing sold out in less than 24 hours. It's now selling for $80 plus on eBay. A little comic book, you know, with this guy's cover on it. They deified Obama on the cover of Rolling Stone, literally putting him in the clouds and putting a lightning glow aura around him. He's on the cover of the new Newsweek, where the title is The New Global Elite. And he sits as a part of Moloch in this, like, design. So, you know, he is being pumped to the masses as actual change, as the leader that we can trust. And I think that we can get conscription passed under him. We'll talk about that especially. In fact, we're going to bring up some clips with Bob Chapman of the InternationalForecaster.com. It is the Alex Jones Show. Please go to PrisonPlanet.tv and become a subscriber. That way you can see my pretty face 2 hours a day or Alex's pretty face 2 hours a day over at the PrisonPlanet.tv. It's the Alex Jones Show. We'll be back after this. Police State 2, The Takeover, and of course, I think Police State 3, Global Domination. Before we go back to Bob Chapman of the InternationalForecaster.com, I want to play these clips of Tom Blankley, editor over at Washington Times, calling for conscription in 2007, saying it's not going to be possible under this administration, and then this week going on to Fox and Friends. So hopefully we're set up there to play this clip. I'm about to hit play, and hopefully it'll go out over the air. Okay, guys, we need audio on this clip. Okay.
Draft should be considered and has always been an option on the table. A Pentagon spokesman frankly rejected the idea today, saying that the military is giving the idea, quote, absolutely no consideration, unquote. But is it time to revive conscription for the first time since Richard Nixon? Back to discuss it, our Democratic strategist, Stephanie Cutter, and editor of the Washington Times editorial page, Tony Blankley. Tony, it just seemed to me political year. Nobody's going to recommend a return to the draft. But is the draft a good idea, or is a partial draft a good idea? We got 5,000 troops in the Army. It is breaking, according to the Army Chief of Staff, on the basis of two small guerrilla wars. Now, is the U.S. Army big enough and strong enough to handle all the commitments this country's got?
It's not going to happen on Bush's watch, because it's not time for that debate to occur. But the military clearly is not big enough to do the job that's going to be required of it.
All right, let's stop that clip right there. Notice he said, it's not going to happen on Bush's watch. No, we need somebody else to get behind, but the military's not big enough. In come Fox and Friends.
Welcome back, everyone. 7 minutes before the top of the hour. Can America's power last forever? And how do we achieve a new nationalism that puts our country's survival first?
Those questions and more are addressed in a brand new book by Tony Blankley. It comes out today. It's called American Grit. What will it take for America to survive and win in the 21st century? And joining us for his first TV interview about the book is Tony Blankley. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you.
If you read some of the European papers, they're talking about America is finally in decline. They're getting what they've had coming to them all along. Do you believe that?
Well, it could be so. We have it in our power not to be in decline, and that's what my book's about. I do believe that for the first time in our history, if we don't do a lot of things smart and tough, we could get overwhelmed by the rise of China, the rise of India, the rise of radical Islam. Mm-hmm. We've failed to exploit our energy. We're not paying enough attention to what our kids are learning. Bill Ayers is actually a senior person in guiding the curriculum design of America. That started just this last March. But we have it in our power, and I try to write some tough proposals for what we need to do so that our grandchildren live in a country strong enough to protect our freedoms just as we do.
Yeah, Tony, your book's going to get a lot of attention because there are some controversial, bold suggestions. The first one, obviously, that caught my eye was that you were calling for a universal draft, which would mean that all 18-year-olds in America would have to serve for 2 years.
Yes, look, I don't like it. I love the volunteer army. I've got a son who's a second lieutenant in the volunteer army. I know the young men and women who serve. They're the greatest young kids we've ever produced. But we don't have enough troops, and it's manifest that we don't by several magnitudes. For instance, when George Bush wanted to have the surge, he was told by the senior generals we didn't have the extra 20,000 troops to finish the war. Okay. Now, he decided...
Now, you see how he uses that false argument. The surge was never intended to work, and if we had 20,000 more troops, we still would have been in Iraq, and it wouldn't have de-escalated any time sooner. But he uses that as an excuse, and he's always saying, oh, I love the volunteer army, but it's just not going to work. And he also grandstands the fact that his son is in the military to try to promote this idea of conscription. Bob, do you think that we're going to have conscription under this new administration?
Absolutely.
Not
boys
what I wanted to
and
hear.
Girls. We're going to have them both. No one's going to escape it. And I would expect probably under those circumstances that a lot of young people would leave the country.
I hope a lot of young people will leave the country. I hope that we stand up about this. But when you say, boys and girls, what do you expect? Do you expect that the women will mostly be thrown into some kind of a homeland security program while the men will have to go fight overseas?
No, I think probably they'll have a volunteer offer. Mm-hmm. And if they don't get enough volunteers to fill the segment within the active army, then they'll change it.
Well, I certainly hope you're wrong, but it does look that way. I also see them scooping up kids from poor black neighborhoods under the guise of Obama and, this black power movement, this youth movement. You know, anybody can do this. It's the Alex Jones Show. We'll be back with Bob Chapman of the InternationalForecaster.com after this.
Shackles on me.
That's right, sing it, Jimmy.
Don't want no shackles on me.
That's right, I don't want any shackles on me, whether they be physical shackles or shackles of the mind.
I sit down with Big Brother. Don't like those RFIDs.
No, sir. I got to tell you, Bob, one of the more disconcerting things that I saw on the web, and the reason that I think that they are going to scoop out African-American young males from these poor regions is a teacher, I think it was out in Missouri or something like that, got all of his students to do this Alpha Omega Alpha Omega, this little like Obama brigade, and they all had to memorize a part of his health plan, and they're inspired to do, you know, I can be the next architect because of Obama. And they're wearing Obama shirts, and it shows like this lemming-like mentality of people getting behind this guy just because of the color of his skin and not the content of his character. So I really think that's going to be a big recruitment sect for our military.
You're probably very right. It's all part of psychopolitical warfare as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you have high unemployment, and if you just take the median official figure, 13.5%, and you extend it over the next year, and let's say it grows to, say, 16 or 17%, again, you're at the levels you were in 1939, and there's a lot of disgruntlement. The major people who get unemployed are people between 18 and 25 years old. This is a problem Europe's having right now, and that's why you were seeing the problems in Greece, among other things. And so you got to get these people off the streets. Who does the fighting in warfare? Who causes the troubles? Who's got the strength? Who has the endurance? Young people do. I mean, that's why governments draft young people, usually 17 and older, and usually 17 to 25. So they want these people off the streets. So they have their make-believe war, mm-hmm. and they draft men and women and get them off the streets. So that, you know, if there's revolution in the country, old people like me have to fight it.
Bob, why don't you throw out the website and the phone number?
The website, theinternationalforecaster.com. And if you go there, you can get a free introductory copy of The International Forecaster. And you can also get one by calling toll-free 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178 and theinternationalforecaster.com.
All right, I want to play this Obama Youth Brigade marching formation clip just to show the mentality of these young kids. I mean, these are teenage kids, maybe, you know, 12 to 18. And, you know, Obama is the next savior, folks. We got volume on that, guys?
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next doctor.
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next lawyer.
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next automotive technician.
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next chef.
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next architect.
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next engineer.
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next fireman.
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next architect.
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next chemical engineer.
Because of Obama, I'm inspired to be the next entrepreneur.
And while they're doing this, they're all doing special hand signals. It's very military-esque. And how about because of yourself, you want to be the next engineer? Because of pride in yourself, you want to be the next architect? And why are you worshiping someone who's unproven? Why are you worshiping a state senator up until 2004 who gives a keynote speech, gets into the actual Senate for the first time in 04, and then less than 4 years later in 2007, really less than 3 years later, he announces his candidacy for presidency and wins? It seems a little fishy, doesn't it, Bob?
Well, I started trading him in 1992. Mm-hmm. And if you look behind the scenes, you'll see that.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're trying to do is create a cult here. And, you know, we've seen cults before in North Korea and in China. We also have seen them in history. And it's a very, very bad thing. It usually ends up in a very, very bad way.
Yeah, I would imagine it looks like bad news brown to me. I want to talk a little bit about some of the appointments that have been made over the week. People now know that Richard Haass is on the team. They're well aware that Rahm Emanuel is the chief of staff, Mr. Conscription himself. But a couple this week where John Kerry is now the head of the Foreign Relations Committee and will be Hillary Clinton's right-hand man. See, you throw an election in 2004, you play ball, you're the head of the Foreign Relations Committee 4 years later. And Obama has also named as his global climate czar or his global warming czar, Carol M. Browner, one of the 14 leaders of the Socialist Group's Commission for a Sustainable World Society, which openly is calling for global governance and basically regulating you through a carbon tax. Isn't that delicious? I mean, these two appointments should raise red flags all over the place, Bob.
Well, and they have to people who look and think and read. But it's always, you know, that group that absorbs everything that's going on. And then you have the rest of the people. And half the people, in America at least, don't know what's going on, don't care to know what's going on. And somebody said to me the other day, one of the programs, well, what do you do? I said, well, the only thing you can do is use them as shields. And but you know, what more do they expect? They think this is all going to go away. They don't understand fascism, socialism, communism, nor do they want to. They just hope that they can get their belly filled and go to the football games and things like that. And that's all they care about. So the other half of the people who are left, probably 10 to 15% will really carry the ball. Mm-hmm. And I think because we've been robbed of representation in our government and we're going to have high unemployment, and even if we have a draft, there's going to be terrible social problems in America.
I have to agree there, and you mentioned the football game. For the first time ever, ESPN is going to show the presidential inauguration. That's how important Obama is. So the sports networks are even going to be covering Obama. And, you know, when I saw this article yesterday, it didn't really surprise me because, you know, a couple months back, even before he had been elected president, I was sitting down watching SportsCenter with my friend, and Obama's face, you know, popped up on the screen. I'm like, well, why is Obama on SportsCenter? And the guy's like, oh, you didn't hear? He's for a college football playoff. So ESPN has really been supporting him. And I'm thinking to myself, man, you know, as a sports fan, I've always wanted a college football playoff. So he really is playing to the bread and circus commoner. And, you know, that's what most people see. Like you said, they don't see that he is backed by people like Brzezinski. They don't see that his team with people like Gates is, you know, same as the old boss, same as the new boss. And he is going to keep carrying out this globalist agenda for the internationalists. All right, let's take some calls. Hopefully they're going to be on topic with Bob Chapman of TheInternationalForecaster.com. That's TheInternationalForecaster.com. Let's go to a first-time caller, Jim, in Vegas. Jim, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Yeah, I do have a question for Bob. I'm buying gold and silver right now, gold eagles and other silver, junk silver and whatnot. And my question to you is everyone saying that gold is going to go up, silver is going to go up in the next 18 months? How long do you hold on to it for? Because if gold is at, say, $22,000 an ounce, but it's $2,000 an ounce of worthless dollars, and what happens if they call it in? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You're saying $2,200
an ounce.
Yeah,
we know what you're saying.
Yes.
And you've asked a number of questions here. First of all, people subscribe to the International Forecaster so they'll know when to make changes. Second of all, I hope that you're doing business with Midas as well. They do sell gold and silver coins, mm-hmm. if you didn't know that. And and also, I think the accumulation thereof is a good thing to do, and I don't expect any kind of execution of law that's going to relieve you of your gold and silver assets. And the reason why is there's not enough Americans who own enough amount of gold and silver to make it worthwhile for the government to enrage everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they wanted to do that, they would go to the ETF and say, look, you people are professionals, so we need that 720 tons of gold that you've got there. and we'd like to relieve you of it, but we're going to pay you in dollars. And professional investors don't really care. They'll take the dollars and say, well, what can I do about it? But I don't see them going after coins, and it's just too politically undesirable under the circumstances, because they're going to have a lot of other problems, and those other problems are social in nature, if not quasi-political. If you have unemployment and people have lost their homes and their jobs and their cars and, you know, they're on the streets, it's going to be a very, very bad thing. So I don't think the government will want any more heat than it's already got.
Mm-hmm. And if you're looking to exchange that gold for some type of currency and the dollar has already been blown out, I mean, it'll still be worth something in euros, in pounds, in foreign currency, where hopefully it's a tightrope, isn't it, Bob? I mean, if the dollar goes under, it's the world reserve currency.
You know, you've got a good point there. And mm-hmm. let me give you the bottom line. Mm-hmm. There is no place else to go. Mm-hmm. The stock market has gone down and will continue to do so because earnings are going down. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're in a deep recession already, and depression is beginning. It's just that nobody wants to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, the interest rates ultimately are going to start moving back upward. Mm-hmm. When that happens, real estate has already gone down. Commodities have already gone down. What is left? And you're in a hyperinflationary environment, or at least an inflationary environment, at least for some period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You go to gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get to the apex of the hyperinflation and it starts to head downward because you're heading deeply into depression, what you want to have is only gold bullion coin. And the reason for that is it will hold its value. There's no premium to speak of in it, although premium may happen along the way. I don't know that for sure, neither does anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But if everything goes down 60, 70, 80, 90% like it did in the 1930s, and gold holds its on your own and never goes anywhere, you're a big winner.
Mm-hmm.
But if gold goes to $2,000 or $3,000 an ounce like I think it will, and everything else goes down like I think it will, you're going to be a giant winner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well,
I got to agree
good.
With you there. All right, thank you so much for the call. All right, let's jump to Missy in Michigan. Missy, what's on your mind?
I've been hearing so much about dollar devaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help me understand what that actually looks like? How does that happen? What happens in the real world? They just come out and say your dollar is now worth 70 cents? Or
well, basically, first of all, they do it gradually. So you are less and less aware. But yeah, every day, for instance, before 9/11, our dollar was high above the euro. It was about $1 to 75, 76 cents. So we were, 24 cents more than that. Now the euro is about $1.37, $1.40 compared to our dollar. Bob, why don't you explain it to her?
Because people are talking about it like it's an event, like something will happen and someone will declare, now the dollar is devalued.
Go ahead,
well,
Bob.
A government can do that. And governments usually do that because they owe other people money. And in this case, we owe $17 trillion
mm-hmm.
to our creditors out there who are foreigners. And it's just as bad for Americans as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
so in order to get rid of that, they say, look, our currency is no longer selling at 131 to a euro. It's now selling at 180 to a euro. And so we have decided that for every $10 that you have, we're going to give you one new one. And that is the way devaluation takes place. Now, there are other forms of devaluation. Devaluation is caused by inflation, which robs the currency of its buying power. That's more subtle. It's stealth. It's stealing. Now, the other is, too, but the devaluation is an event. It happens. It's over. Whereas when you have inflation, it gets you a little bit every day.
I mean,
an announcement.
Well, an example for in the real world is if you were to go down to Mexico 10 years ago on a vacation and you brought the dollar, you would have probably gotten twice the bang for your buck because it was worth more. You know, it was more compared to the peso. If you'd gone to Europe, you would have had twice the value to your buck, you know, going over there. But now if you go online and you try to buy something out of Europe and it's in pounds or in euros, you're actually going to pay almost twice what it would be in dollars. So, you know, in the real world, people are stopping taking dollars. I mean, it is the real world. Although it's still the world reserve currency, less and less people want dollars. In fact, some people are requesting euros. I think that was even a subplot in the latest Bond movie. The dictators didn't want dollars anymore. They demanded euros in briefcases. Missy?
Well, I didn't see the movie, but that's probably true. But there are countries who would prefer not to take dollars, particularly in Central and South America.
All right, let's take one more phone call before the break. Let's go to Ship in Missouri. Ship, what's on your mind?
Hey, Jason, how are you?
Good.
All right, my question is for Bob. Bob, mm-hmm. I would like to know how you think the North American Union and potentially the rise of the Amero plays into the whole thing. A new currency could really shape it, and so is this economic collapse? Are they just using it to consolidate wealth and real resources to rob us just so they can say, okay, we're going to start over and we're still on top? I don't know. Could you speak to that, please?
Okay, first of all, the North American Union has effectively, temporarily at least, been derailed thanks to the efforts of Alex Jones and others, the exposure of what the Council on Foreign Relations and Mr. Pastor was trying to get around us without letting us know, but he doesn't realize that lots of us read Foreign Affairs. In fact, I've been a reader since 1960, and that is the house organ of the Council on Foreign Relations, and they came right out and said, this is what we want to do. And so I think it's been stopped at the pass, mm-hmm. and how long that'll last, I don't know. I don't think that they're going to use an Amero in a devaluation in the United States.
Bob, we'll be back right on the other side, and we'll talk about the North American Union, the InternationalForecaster.com, Infowars.com, and PrisonPlanet.tv. Segment with Bob Chapman of the InternationalForecaster.com over at Infowars.com. I am Jason Burma, sitting in for the Alex Jones Show all week. And remember, if you missed any of the broadcast today, we will be rebroadcasting all 4 hours at the bottom of the fourth hour. We're going to be going live on PrisonPlanet.tv in about 5 minutes. Just been so fun sitting in for Alex Jones. What's not fun is the fact that we're being thrown into this just economic disaster in our country. And on top of that, you know, as far as the last caller and the North American Union, Dobbs, one of the last, you know, great American mainline reporters, has reported that the Obama administration is going to open up talks again with the SPP people, the Securities and Prosperity Partnership people that the Bush administration talked to. So we will see where it goes from there. Bob, why don't you give people your website and the phone number?
The website is TheInternationalForecaster.com. The International, FOrecaster.com. The toll-free number is 877-479-8178. 877-479-8178. And you're getting a free copy of the International Forecaster, whether it's by email or in hard copy.
Excellent. Now, you were talking to Ship, and you were saying that you don't think that they're going to bring in an Amero to bring in this North American Union. I tend to think that they're going to try to consolidate the three unions before they even announce a currency. I think that you'll see legislation in Canada and in the United States to do so. You've already had people in the Canadian Parliament saying that we need to put the Canadian dollar on parity with the U.S. dollar. I would be pretty surprised if we saw an actual Amero coin or Amero dollar within the next year, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And, you know, they've been talking about that in Canada for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And at least 20 years and more so in the last several years. But there's a lot of national pride there. And the Canadians are going to fight this just as hard as the Americans are. I find in my probing into Mexico, most people don't even know about it, so it's not an issue. Mm-hmm. But I don't see the Amero being a currency that would be a new currency for the United States. Maybe sometime in the future, 5 or 10 years from now, if the North American Union were to become a successful entity for the internationalists, then there would be a good chance that an Amero would appear. But it's a long ways away. If the dollar's going to be devalued, you're going to get another dollar, except, you know, you give them 5 old ones for 1 new one or whatever the exchange is.
Oh, God. Well, I sincerely hope that doesn't happen in this country, but it is a great possibility. All right, let's take another
call. That's why gold's so important. Gold will appreciate in a way which will offset the loss in the value of the dollar, and that's why gold is so important. It goes up during hyperinflationary times, and it is used in a flight to quality in deflationary times. So it serves all the purposes of a financial being, a currency, a world currency that owes nobody nothing.
All right, let's go to William in Montreal. William, what's on your mind?
Hello. I'm calling you from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's about Sarkozy.
Okay.
And about a speech he made about 2 months ago, talking about the New World Order and the financial crisis, and talking about change as well. So I don't know if you want me to read a part of his speech. I translated.
You got 30 seconds. Go for it.
All right. So this crisis, we should handle it first. The crisis that now clearly can't be solved without massive intervention of the state. The crisis.
We'll be back after this. It's the Alex Jones Show. Thank you so much for joining us, Bob. TheInternationalForecaster.com. Stay on the line. We'll go back to you, William. Back after this.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We are at the top of the third hour this Friday, January 16th, 2009. Before we go to Peter Dale Scott in the next segment, I just want to remind people that there are some great seminars going on in Texas. Thanks to HeartlandEmergency.com. That's HeartlandEmergency.com. They're going to be doing a seminar on dried storable foods, genetically modified foods, heirloom seeds, and, of course, freeze-dried foods with Big John Lipskin, the host of Don't Tread on Me, on Friday night, that's today, at 6 p.m. in Fredericksburg at the Ag Building, 95 Frederick Road, and Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. in Austin at Brave New Books, 1904 Guadalupe Street. This is your chance to learn everything you need to know about freeze-dried storable foods and more. Again, it's Friday at the Ag Building in Fredericksburg at 6 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday at Brave New Books at 2 p.m. You can call Heartland Emergency at 512-921-9015. That's 512-921-9015. Or go to heartlandemergency.com right now. All right, we were talking to William, who was reading a quote from Sarkozy. Recently about the economic crisis. Continue, William.
Yeah, so that was 2 months ago, and he was talking about a meeting they would have in November 15th, but I'm going to continue reading his speech. Mm-hmm. This crisis that now clearly can't be solved without massive intervention of the states. The crisis calls urgently of a new economical order, financial, monetary. This crisis demands a profound need for politics. This crisis would probably mark the true beginnings for a new world order of the 21st century.
You know, if you could get that in high quality, we would love to have it over here. I mean, obviously, it's on YouTube.
You can find it on YouTube. You just type Sarkozy New World Order.
I've seen the YouTube clip, but we like the high quality stuff over here. And yeah, he's not the first world leader to call for this. By the way, I thank you for the call, William.
Okay.
I mean, we had the president of Georgia on Glenn Beck getting this fluff piece interview, this love fest. Oh, you're so good. You're so good. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the head of Georgia over there, he says, Russia is against the New World Order, Glenn. And, you know, Glenn Beck tries to be this anti-New World Order guy. He just got hired by Fox off of CNN, and he's not. As soon as the Georgian leader starts talking about the New World Order, Glenn Beck just wants to be like, oh, he wasn't supposed to say that. But yes, that this idea of a quote unquote New World Order is not what I'm talking about. It's not what Alex Jones is talking about. It's what world leaders have been talking about now for centuries, and really have increased their talk about it over the last few decades. You know, leaders like Jesse Jackson in the civil rights movement, leaders on the right like George H.W. Bush, you know, leaders on the left like Bill Clinton. They're all, just type in New World Order in any of those names. People like Joe Biden, who write articles for the Wall Street Journal saying how I learned to love the New World Order. And the New World Order is just about setting incremental policies to bring in global government. That's why the Bush administration made all these executive orders, passed the Patriot Acts 1 and 2, Military Commissions Act, and all that good stuff. And guess what? The powers ain't going anywhere. And that's why Newsweek puts out an article called Obama's Cheney Dilemma. You know, Cheney had all these terrible, terrible powers, but under Obama, we should keep them. You know, torture, although it sounds good on paper that we should get rid of it, I don't think we should get rid of it. I think that it actually works. But we're about to have a powerhouse guest on in the next segment. It is Peter Dale Scott, who's really, he's been crossing the T's and dotting the I's for some time now as a bastion and light of truth. And his recent article, published last week, Martial Law, the Financial Bailout and War, is over at 911truth.org, and it's a very extensive article. He talks about the members of the House being threatened with martial law in case they weren't going to pass the bailout. He talks about preparations for martial law, as well as the continuity of government programs that were put into place under the Bush administration. We will be back with Peter Dale Scott after this. It's the Alex Jones Show, Infowars.com. And see me right now at PrisonPlanet.tv.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Folks, we are back, and before we go to author and activist Peter Dale Scott, I just want to remind you guys to support our sponsors here in the InfoWar, MySolarBackup.com. I mean, it's really simple, folks. Solar energy cuts your electric bill. It's something we believe in here. MySolarBackup.com will help you get started. People like Jesse Ventura, who live in Mexico 6 months out of the year, they, you know, heat and electric, basically heat their entire home, use all their electric through solar panels. They only use the most minimal amount of energy, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get independence from the power companies, from the system, mysolarbackup.com. All right, we have a very distinguished guest. I was actually lucky enough to interview him while I was hosting the Alex Jones Show over the summer this year. He's the author of many books, and his latest article is Martial Law, the Financial Bailout and War. It's Peter Dale Scott. Thank you for joining us, sir.
I'm glad to be back. Hi there.
Well, let's just get right into it. I mean, in the very beginning of this article, you not only talk about Paulson and the bailout there, but you also talk about how Congress was strong-armed into initially passing this because the initial bailout did fail, and then it was re-proposed. And after a few members, including Inhofe and Sherman, were threatened with martial law, it magically passed, didn't it, Peter?
Yes, well, there was an atmosphere of threats used on Congress. I think that the bailout was ill-advised, certainly in the form that it was. And, of course, the excuse that was used was that they had to act immediately. But I think a test of the what is really bad about this bailout law is it's a means for taking public funds and giving them to enrich the rich after they had made very disastrous investments, which went sour. And instead of moral hazard applying and they're having to pay for it, we are stepping in to pay. And it may be that something like this has to be done, but it should have been done with restraints, for example, to tell them that they can't go on paying these outrageous bonuses for their misdeeds, that they cannot continue to distribute dividends. You know, 85% of the stock in this country is owned by the richest 10% in the country. So if you pass a public law to guarantee the continuation of dividends to banks, which in fact are losing money badly, you're using the public treasury to enrich the rich. And that's a symptom of what's really wrong in this country, I think, that wealth has taken control of both parties. And it was the influence of wealth that drove that legislation through. And it's, of course, just happening again right now. And it's not quite over because, once again, it will go into conference committee. And I think this time they're intending to cut off bonuses and intending to cut off dividends. But I think we should watch very closely to see if this actually happens when the final bill is signed.
Well, there's definitely some political grandstanding now going on as the administrations are about to switch. I mean, now for the first time I'm seeing the media report, conservatives ask if bailout is unconstitutional. And I would say, yes, it's absolutely unconstitutional. But now the mainstream is going to make this into a right-left argument, especially with the House Democrats now proposing an $825 billion stimulus bill. I mean, is there any end in sight to these bailout packages, to these stimulus bills? I mean, what do you see happening in the next 6 months?
Well, I think I've always been uninclined to predict the future. I think it's an easy way to make big mistakes, but particularly right now, we really are going into you know, people point back to the Depression of the 1930s as an example of where we've been before. But I think we're possibly in an even worse crisis than we were then. And one thing for sure is that America's profile in the world is greater than it was, so that the world will suffer more acutely. The short answer to your question is absolutely there's going to be more and more bailing out, trillions of dollars. People have estimated up to $8.5 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it will be done through Congress, and a lot of it's going to be done, a trillion or more has been done through the Federal Reserve. And people should understand that what the Federal Reserve does is using our money. But they don't go to Congress. They're using the powers that were granted them decades ago. And it's completely secret. There's no accountability. And you get the irony that Bloomberg, who's a billionaire, his company is suing the Federal Reserve to force them to say what they've been doing with our money. And you really have reached a point where it's no longer democracy if there's taxation without representation going on through the Federal Reserve. So there are left, right, and center in every direction, the treatment of the banks, treatment of the big multinational corporations. We're going to see huge bailouts with a minimum of control, and I think all we can do from outside is to insist as here are the things that we should insist on. One, as much transparency as possible. There was really no transparency in the first bailout, Paulson's bailout.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is a vital criterion is democracy is suffering right now because we're getting, for about 30 years now, we've been getting rapidly increasing disparity between wealth and poverty in this country. The rich there are ways of measuring this, and America has become, of all the Western countries, probably the leading example of extreme disparity between wealth and poverty. And the criterion that should be applied to every law that's passed and all these bailouts is, will it diminish the disparity of wealth and income in this country, or will it increase it? And if it increases it, it's a bad law. And that, I think, is something, it's a sign of the problem that this obvious criterion has hardly been invoked. It has come up, I think, with the auto industry. I think it's perfectly obvious that if you're going to ask the workers to accept less in their paycheck, then you should ask the people who probably are being overpaid at the top. to accept less, too, particularly because it was their failure of leadership that led into this crisis. Does that not make sense?
I absolutely agree with you, and it's just disgusting how, you know, like you said, the upper echelon continue to rake in the bonuses, still have these massive salaries in the hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars in most cases. And like you said, it's going to be the common worker who loses his pension, who loses his 401k, who loses his benefits and may not even have a job, because I really don't see the auto industry surviving another year in this country. We don't make anything left. And there's nothing we make in this country. The last thing was cars, and that's about to end. And going back to what you said about
the... It's not quite as bad as that. I think we're pretty good in high tech.
Well, that's true.
We've outsourced a lot of it, but the central leadership of that industry is...
Yeah, but most of it's still built in India or China.
Yes, a lot of the jobs have gone, but the America is... you know, now we're talking about something that's been happening over 50 years, and that is that we've put so much emphasis on maintaining our military that we've allowed civilian leadership to, I mean, civilian industry and the civilian economy to migrate to other countries. And one of the things that we have to say about this bailout is that the crisis it faced should have been faced much earlier. And worse than that, the states did, they addressed the problem of predatory lending, which is at the heart of it, because here were very unscrupulous companies going out and hard selling mortgages to people who they knew couldn't sustain them, particularly because these were variable mortgages that would start with a very reasonable rate, but which they intended to jack up to 11, 12, 15% usurious rates. They knew that this was all a phony operation, and that this is where the big banks are culpable, because first of all, they lobbied for Congress to make it easier to do this sort of thing, for them to invest in it, and then they packaged all these mortgages into securities, which they sold all over the world. So that's why we have a world crisis now, based on the failure in the or the downturn in the American housing market. Little innocent countries like Iceland, who have done no wrong to anybody, are suffering terribly because the banking system of the world has supported this bubble and now is having to pay for it everywhere, every part of the world. There's one other thing. You could easily, in legislation, establish a principle of some kind of ratio between the richest return and the poorest in any business. So if a worker in an industry is getting, I don't know, shall we say, $30,000 a year, you establish a limit, maybe 20 times that, which would be the maximum that anybody in that industry can make. And this has been kicked around for some years as a solution to the problem of disparity of income. But I'm not sure that our two parties that are so heavily subsidized by the wealthy are going to put that into legislation, but they should. So just say 20 times as much as the basic pay is the most that anybody can make in any industry. Is that not reasonable?
It seems reasonable to guys like you and me, but to the global elite, that's going to cut into their profit margin quite a bit.
Yeah, it scares them, exactly. And that's what we learned in the bailout last fall, is how vigorously they fought to maintain their bonuses and maintain their dividends, even though they're lucky not to be in jail, some of those people. And some of them actually still, not just Madoff, but a number of other people.
I think they're super lucky. It's the Alex Jones Show. We'll be back with Peter Dale Scott, Infowars.com. All right, folks, we are back. It's the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burmes. I've been sitting in all week. I'm a filmmaker. Put together Loose Change, Final Cut, and, of course, Fabled Enemies. You can get both of those as well as all of Alex Jones' titles over at Infowars.com. And we're talking bailout with Peter Dale Scott. We're also talking the Federal Reserve. And I want to remind people that The Federal Reserve is an independent organization. I mean, you can watch Alan Greenspan on PBS actually tout that. Oh, we're independent of the federal government, and actually we have no oversight, and we're really above the president in many respects. And if you see how the Federal Reserve works, the board, and correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, but I believe that you vote for you're a constituent, you vote for your congressmen, your senators, and things like that. But those people are the ones who actually decide who's going to be on the board of the Federal Reserve. And they serve, I want to say, what is it, 13 members. And what do they serve, 8-year terms?
Yes, it's a considered way of preventing people just printing money. The idea of it is, and by the way, you do get something like this in England and in France, because they're frightened of democracy cheapening money, because obviously you think, I don't know what the right solution here is. I'm not as frightened. My real fear is not the particular individuals who are in the Federal Reserve. My fear is of the influence of the wealthy in this country, which works through the Fed, it works through the Treasury Department, it works very much through the CIA, and that's actually been my specialty over these years. You know, at the beginning, the CIA was sort of planned on Wall Street, and all the first directors, or practically all the first directors and deputy directors, were taken en masse from Wall Street law firms and Wall Street investment companies. And that bias in terms of preserving wealth has affected our foreign policy since the war. It wasn't totally evil at the beginning, but ever since America started having to tighten its belt, which is roughly at the end of the Vietnam War, it's been done in such a way as to protect the rich and let somebody else pay. And what we've seen from this is declining income in the third world, which, of course, leads to increased violence in the third world. And declining income, real income, not just what the numbers on a paycheck, but real income has been declining for the working class in this country and increasingly now for the middle class as well. And that's why I say, you've had this bubble, this financial bubble that has been, in a sense, extracting wealth out of the body politic, depositing it in the bank accounts of the rich, and now the bailouts are still, in a sense, trying to preserve that particular relationship, which we've got to talk about martial law and war in this program, but I really am, of course, very wound up about this influence of wealth.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to move into, martial law, the financial bailout, and more. Where does martial law fit into all this? Not only were they threatened with martial law, but we have an Obama administration that says that they're going to redistribute troops into Afghanistan. Obviously, there's tensions not only in Gaza and Israel, but Pakistan is now more and more, showing up on the media as the enemy. I mean, is martial law here at home something that we should really be worried about?
Preparations for martial law have been increasing constantly for the last 30 years. It really goes back to the troubles back in the 1960s and 1970s when there was a case, actually. I think I approved of calling out the troops in places like Detroit because the federal troops were not as racist as the local police and were more efficient in restoring order. But traditionally in this country, as I'm sure most of the audience know, you only use federal troops in an extreme emergency. We have Posse Comitatus Acts dating back to Reconstruction after the Civil War, which forbid the use of troops in a normal way in police activities. And that's been undermined now since the early 1980s by secret planning by a committee that was set up under the Reagan administration, and it's for 20 years it kept on going, and two of the chief people in the planning, not the only ones, were Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, and they were planning for what was in effect called the suspension of the American Constitution, first of all in an atomic attack. But what the extraordinary thing was, they took planning against an atomic attack and applied it to normal police activity, and that's what we're getting today.
We'll be back with Peter Dale Scott. Martial law, the financial bailout, and more. It's the Alex Jones Show. Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv. It's the Alex Jones Show. We're live right now streaming video over at PrisonPlanet.tv. We're talking to Peter Dale Scott, author of The War Conspiracy and many other books. I think that was actually a banned book for quite some time. He coined the term parapolitics. And we were just talking about the continuity of government program, often referred to as the shadow government. And you were talking about how it was revamped in the 80s. In the 80s under Reagan. And what I found in my research, and I have a little part of it in Fabled Enemies, is in the late 80s, early 90s, the National Programs Office took over the COG responsibilities under George H.W. Bush, the then vice president. And it just expanded their powers. It was almost the birth of the sole source contract, where they went into all these little black ops modes. Why don't you talk about that?
And then just to carry it on, at the end of the G.H.W. Bush administration, the New York Times ran an article and said that there was no more atomic, with the disappearance of the Soviet Union, they were no longer so frightened of an atomic attack, so they were winding up these programs. It was a very misleading article, because what had happened was that they had shifted the planning from an atomic focus to just any emergency. And one of the last acts of the Reagan administration was to pass an executive order that made that official, that it could be any emergency. So the planning continued under Clinton. And according to Alexander Coburn, Clinton had no real idea of the extent of this planning. He must have had some idea of it, because he signed a couple of orders himself. But the really extraordinary thing is that in the 90s under Clinton, neither Cheney nor Rumsfeld had anything to do with the government. Each of them was a CEO of a major corporation. But the planning continued, and the Army has one of the last fruits of the Clinton administration was a new directive for the Army, which legitimized the idea that the Army would permanently have what they call a co-op, a continuity of operations program in the Army. For the first time, instead of the people who had worried about an attack from abroad would now worry from an attack at home, from violence of any form. And right after 9/11, we got a whole series of things, which I'm sure were COG plans, one of which is going to be very important in the future, and that is the creation of an Army command for North America. Just like you have a command for Southcom for South America, there's now Northcom for North America. And last September, they announced that they moved a combat brigade from Iraq to the United States, ready for combat in the United States. This is entirely unprecedented, and it's been announced that this is probably, they announced it in connection with the inauguration, and we've seen since then the troops are now in Washington, controlling Washington. But this is not an ad hoc thing. This is a permanent thing under this new order.
Absolutely, and you know what? Let's play the clip of Obama before he's elected, talking about a civilian security force, and he's openly said that he's going to bring 20,000 troops into the United States for domestic operations. Let's
they're
play
here
that clip.
Now. Yeah,
yeah.
Here.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well funded.
All right, so you know, it really does seem like, again, these are continuations that you see, whether it's Republican or Democrat. Just like you said, began with Reagan into the Bush 1 administration. Continuity of government plans were then still expanded upon in the Clinton administration. And then, of course, under the Bush 2 administration, like you said, COG was put into place on 9/11. A lot of people don't understand that. There were already drills going on that morning. And then by the time the attacks had hit the United States, COG was immediately put into place. Dick Cheney was rushed off to a PEOC. You know, George Bush was put into an undisclosed location, flying around Air Force One all day. And, you know, most people,
you're right.
Yeah. And most people scoff at the idea of this shadow government. And it was on the cover of the Washington Times. So I see only more expansion on this COG type program. I don't think it's a coincidence that this week is when we saw the 9/11 Commission release over 1,200 interviews, transcripts of interviews at the end of the Bush administration, so they couldn't be ridiculed. I'm sure that, you know, well, when researchers...
You looked at that schedule, almost half of them are still withheld.
Yes.
They're releasing them, but not really releasing them.
Yeah, some of them still have clearances on them. They say, oh, well, national security clearance.
It's going to take legislation to get all of that stuff cleared, and I don't have much confidence that this Congress will do it, but I would certainly, I think it's, you know, if we're revamping the whole of our constitutional arrangement in this country because of this largest murder, certainly in the history of the United States, and least investigated, and we still don't know, and we can't even see, you know, the after the Kennedy assassination, you had the Warren Commission, which essentially covered things up, but at least it had the decency to publish its evidence. And we're going to need legislation to force the evidence, whatever it was, from the 9/11 Commission release. But let me tell you the thing that worries me most about Obama. We had an election where we had a choice. The parties gave us a choice between a candidate, McCain, who wanted to fight two wars, and a candidate, Obama. Well, by the way, I mean, I could say good things about Obama on this program. I'm not totally hostile to him by any means, except when it came to Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was talking about Iraq, this is what he had to say. I'm quoting now from his website. The scale of our deployments in Iraq continues to set back our ability to finish the fight in Afghanistan. Well, it's very clear since then that Obama means to not just to fight in Afghanistan, but to escalate in Afghanistan. And I think you've already said that that's a war which is going nowhere, and is our presence is making things worse, not better. It's and any sane person looking at that war knows that if you're even thinking of trying to finish it, first of all, you're not going to succeed. The Russians didn't. The British didn't. Nobody has ever succeeded in doing this. But if you're going to try, you're going to have to put vastly more troops there than there are now. We are destabilizing Pakistan, which is one of the shakiest constitutional governments in the region, and is one with nuclear weapons. So what we are doing has increased the chances that Islamic fundamentalists may end up with a state of Pakistan and nuclear weapons to boot. So this is where I think Obama needs to be reined in, and I don't see that coming from Congress.
No, I don't see that either, and I see it as a redistribution of forces, getting people out of an unpopular war in Iraq only to put them into Afghanistan and create the same kind of a quagmire situation, so we still have our presence in the Middle East. I mean, to me, this is really about building a Eurasian Union. It's what the PNAC guys talked about in rebuilding America's defenses and having a presence there. I feel like Iran is probably the most unstable bloc there, but they haven't been able to really propagate a reason for us to go in there with the American people. You know, again, Pakistan's being demonized at the moment. You know, most people in this country are still behind a war in Afghanistan and Iraq because they still think the boogeyman, Osama bin Laden, is out there. They just reiterated that by putting out an audio tape of him taking the Palestinian plight. So anybody who disagrees with Israeli force on the Gaza Strip is automatically, you know, associated with the deepest, darkest villain there is out there. You know, I don't see us leaving, Peter.
I think eventually I see us losing and leaving like Vietnam, but it took
you know, it took a decade, really, after America realized it couldn't win before the Vietnam War was over, and an awful lot of people died, and even Americans died under Nixon, who had won on the campaign of ending the war. So we're used to presidents who campaign on ending a war who make things worse. Yes, I fear it here. I don't, by the way, I'm not accusing Obama of being a cynic who is out to deceive the American people. I just see him as somebody hedged in by these forces who want that war. The underlying fact is that American oil companies have now invested a great deal in the oil and gas of Central Asia, and they need ways of getting it out. And they have one insecure pipeline going through Georgia, and we saw the trouble there last fall. Mm-hmm. And they would like very much to have a gas and an oil pipeline through Afghanistan. It's not going to happen by putting U.S. troops there, because that is just increasing the tension in the country. And you know, the PNAC goal was to has been bought by the U.S. Army. Their stated mission is full spectrum dominance in the world, mm-hmm. and part of that is this. Continuity of operations mission for the Army here is to have full spectrum dominance in the United States, because obviously if you want to dominate the world, you're going to have to dominate this country too. And these are still things that are not fully implemented, and what the people listening to this program have to do is to alert their friends and their neighbors that, you know, the real role of the U.S. Army is to protect the American people. It is not to control the American people. That's a revolutionary change, and it should be challenged, and it should be stopped.
I absolutely agree with you there. My question is, do you think that conscription could actually happen under this administration? Tom Blankley, editor over at the Washington Times, has been parading around the media now for the last few years talking about conscription. I've got a clip of him on Pat Buchanan's MSNBC show where he's talking about it in the summer of 07, saying, well, the time for that debate isn't now. It'll be under a new administration. Lo and behold, we get that new administration, and a week before they're inaugurated, the same guy, Blankley, puts out a book called American Grit, where, again, he's calling for conscription of 18 to 25-year-olds, 3 months in a boot camp, and 2 years mandatory service. And this is echoed by Obama's new chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel. He was just on C-SPAN over the summer talking about this same program. Is it going to happen? Is there a possibility of it happening here?
Well, again, I'm reluctant to predict, because the big block to it happening is that we will go back to the America of the 1960s and you will have a new anti-war movement. Mm-hmm. And this was the big issue when America went into Iraq in 2003. And the generals were absolutely right. It should have been done with 500,000 troops. And Rumsfeld said, that's ridiculous. We can use our new sophisticated weapons and win it quickly with only 120,000. And, of course, he was wrong. But the reason that they didn't want to go to 500,000 troops is that they would have needed to have a draft for that. And that's why I'm not going to predict that we'll get a draft. We're going to get people who say, if you want to maintain all these missions, you're going to have a draft, and particularly because one thing that's certain is that Iraq has had very negative impact on recruitment for the Army. But the civilian people are very terrified of creating a situation where, once again, they are forcing young Americans to protect themselves by getting involved in the anti-war movement.
Peter, where can people get your information? I know you write for 911truth.org a lot, and you're on Blogger.
Yeah, I have my own website. I used to put things in it. Now it's mostly just connection to, I've written quite a lot of articles on the Internet recently, and my own website is basically just a kind of a gateway to going into, it's hot linked to all these other articles. Be careful listening to this. It's simple, but it's important to get it right. www.peterdalescott.net. Or if you want, you could do .org, but do not do peterdalescott.com because that's a hostile network. And so please remember peterdalescott.net.
Basically just attackers trying to use your good name?
It's a funny, I don't quite know what it is. Peterdalescott.com was opened up in Kenya by a company that's now in Belize. The only things it has on it that have anything to do with me are negative reviews of my books.
So. Yeah, how dare you try to expose light on the darkness over the past 30 to 40 years? You've been at this forever, haven't you? I mean, literally 30 or 40 years.
The Vietnam War started, mm-hmm. and then because of that, I saw a connection between the Vietnam War, and it really happened after Kennedy was assassinated, so I got drawn into that. And again, you know, I don't think we'll ever really have a chance of rational government in this country until people on high admit that Kennedy wasn't just killed by a disgruntled ex-Marine called Lee Harvey Oswald. Everybody knows it, but officially that's even, you know, Nixon said that the Warren Report was the biggest scam, biggest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people. That's on one of the tapes we've got out of the White House. But officially, of course, it's still the official doctrine that Lee Harvey Oswald did it. He acted alone. And with 9/11, 19 crazy Arabs did it, and they acted alone. You look at one of these, what I call deep events, the ones which we know there's more to it than meets the eye. I'm struck how much continuity of modus operandi there is between the Kennedy assassination and 9/11. And I have references to those articles that are on the internet that you can get through my website.
Yeah, there definitely does seem to be a lot of players involved in both the Kennedy assassination and 9/11 as well. And, you know, in the mainstream media, at least last week, they were saying, oh, 9/11 conspiracy theorists might be right. There's this new document where this mob boss takes entire credit through an FBI asset for the Kennedy assassination. Well, a mob boss couldn't call the Secret Service off the car, and you can see that in the video. So obviously, even
he
if this
plan the parade route is the most obvious thing. Yes,
yeah,
he,
absolutely.
The mob boss is Carlos Marcello. He mm-hmm. could not have planned the parade route through Dallas, which took this unexplained little detour to go underneath the Texas School Book Depository.
Exactly. Yeah, and again, he couldn't have called off those two Secret Service agents, and you can see that right in the video, folks. Come on, this is a government black op from start to finish. Use some mob players to get rid of some people to provide cover. You know, don't buy it if the mainstream media is putting it out there. Look into it for yourself. Final segment with Peter Dale Scott. It's the Alex Jones Show. Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv, and TruthNews.us. We are back. It is the Alex Jones Show, final segment with Peter Dale Scott, peterdalescott.net or .org. In the last few minutes, Peter, I really want to get your take on some of the appointments, some of the administrative officials in this. I mean, we've got Rahm Emanuel, chief of staff. Gates is going to stay on for at least another year, they're telling us. John Kerry just appointed as the head of the Foreign Relations Committee. What do you think about this new administration?
Well, you know, I see a mix of hopeful and depressing features about it. I'm 80 years old, and I've seen a lot of new administrations, and I expect them to lean in one direction to assure one constituency and another to reassure another. I think the one that was most predictable and upsets me the most is Rahm Emanuel as chief of staff. And that's because I've spent the last six or seven or eight years campaigning to have a genuine investigation of 9/11. And in 2006, we had a number of people in the Democratic primaries who were saying the same thing, and many of them could have been elected, like Colonel Bowman, for example. And Rahm Emanuel and Senator Schumer went full out to campaign against those people in the Democratic primaries, even at the cost of losing the seat, because the candidate who defeated, the good candidate, was then defeated by a Republican. On the economic side, you have both Geithner, assuming that he's going to get confirmed, which is not clear, and I'm certainly not happy that Lawrence Summers is the chairman of the economic advisors. But what's more important here is not the people that he put in to reassure the bankers, because he has to do that. It's the people he didn't put in to balance them. And we could have had Stiglitz, we could have had Paul Krugman, we could have had Jamie Galbraith, or a number of good Democratic economists who are challenging the way the bailout went, and I'm disappointed that they're not in. I do think that the abuses of the Justice Department will be basically, I have no opinions really about Holder, but underneath him, the new counsel, the legal office inside Justice, a very good person. I think the idea that they get someone from outside the CIA, Panetta, I think is a good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, you can, Democrats in particular have trouble getting their nominees for head of CIA approved, and Carter had this trouble, and Kennedy had this trouble. I think Panetta will get in. He is an outsider, and he will get further, I think, than Stansfield Turner was able to, who was Carter's nominee, who was a very honest man, and the CIA just ignored him, really, and ran circles around him. I think Panetta is probably a good choice. So, you see, I'm not giving a very clear picture. And I think we shouldn't have a clear picture. I think we've got to give Obama his 100 days and see if he can be like Roosevelt and really get the country started up again, or whether he's going to be like Jimmy Carter and just face confusion and chaos in Washington.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's peterdalescott.org or peterdalescott.net. It's the Alex Jones Show. We'll be back after this. Infowars.com, or join me right now via the streaming video at prisonplanet.tv. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, the fourth and final hour of this worldwide broadcast. It's the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burmes. I've been sitting in all week. Don't worry, you get Alex back on Sunday. We're about to have Webster Griffin Tarpley on the program after 5 after, author of the recent books Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, and of course, Barack Obama, The Postmodern Coup, which you can get at Infowars.com right now. I'm going to fly through some phone calls in this first 5 minutes, and then we'll take some phone calls for Webster Tarpley, hopefully on topic, at about 45 past the hour in the last 15 minutes. All right, let's see where we're at. Let's go to John in Ohio. John, what's on your mind?
Yes, Jason. I'd ask, before I get to my point, I'd ask do you have Tarpley talk about the Middle East. I heard his last Saturday program. Mm-hmm. And he didn't talk about it, but sometimes there's a delay. They play the wrong week. But at any rate, I think that I appreciate a lot of what Professor Scott has done over the years, especially his research into the CIA involvement in the Kennedy assassination mm-hmm. and the Vietnam War. But I think he's typical of many people who are saying, please give him a chance after he's Obama has shown that he is nothing but a stooge for the worst Wall Street and war industry interest. And he's done this. He's shown where he's at even before these rotten appointments like Gates and Dennis Ross, this ultra-Zionist, and the even more ultra-Zionist rabid warmonger Rahm Emanuel. He's called for increasing the troops so long ago by 100,000. He's called for he's voted for every hundreds of billions of dollars for this this rotten war against Iraq. He's voted for the FISA spying or the negation of the FISA and giving total immunity to Bush, a reinstatement of the Patriot Act. Mm-hmm. We know where he stands, and I think people are going to have to. I don't know if it's too late. At his inauguration, punch this bubble, this cult-like Kool-Aid Jim Jones bubble around him, and especially in this latest genocide and ethnic cleansing that he is supporting, not only by his silence, but trotting out his surrogate David Axelrod to justify the genocide that Israel is perpetrating against against the poor Palestinian people.
Well, I don't think there is as much of a argument against the fact that he is put in a hawk-like administration. Rahm Emanuel is extremely hawk-like. You know, it's just people like Peter Del Scott, people like Ray McGovern. You know, they're left-leaning. You know, they're still able to get on stage with the likes of Michael Moore at some of the book signings.
Well, I don't think he's left. But, Jason, I don't think he's I don't think it's left to make excuses for this guy. There are people on the genuine left, like WSWS.org or even counterpunch.com, the Coburn site.
Alexander Cockburn,
And these people are totally opposed from the point of view of the left. And I think unless people don't keep on saying, give him a chance when he's leading us into even bigger wars against Pakistan and against and justifying this outrageous support for Israel, which is the number one fire starter, war starter, and trigger for everything. That it's the worst elements of the U.S. military industrial complex is used to incite war against Iraq, Iran.
Well, then you should like my next guest, because Webster Griffin Tarpley is not going to be giving Obama a chance, hasn't given Obama a chance, has really gone after him since day one. In fact, I kind of hope that Tarpley is off in his analysis. You know, he has given an extreme analysis, this being the next wave of fascism, and he may be correct. I mean, when you have a guy on the, and by the way, I thank you for the call. When you have a guy like Obama on the cover of Spider-Man, okay, the cover of Spider-Man, and this isn't even the cover of Spider-Man, right here is the new global elite Obama, but on the cover of Spider-Man, and it sells out in less than a day, I gotta buy a comic book that has a price tag of $4 for 80 on eBay? Yeah, it's pretty dangerous, this cult-like Obama mentality. We'll be back with Webster Griffin Tarpley. It's the Alex Jones Show, Infowars.com.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
All right, folks, we are back. It is the Alex Jones Show. I'm Jason Burmes, sitting in all week. Remember, Alex will be back on Sunday. I'm a filmmaker. I've put together quite a few 9/11 documentaries, my latest being Fabled Enemies, really goes into the international intelligence organization that carried out 9/11. Of course, we have new 9/11 documents, many still being withheld, but released at the end of this presidency, all the transcripts from the declassified interviews that they held. You can get Fabled Enemies right now at Infowars.com or become a PrisonPlanet.tv subscriber. See all of my films, all Alex's films, and this broadcast last 2 hours via the web. All right, we are now joined with perhaps Obama's harshest critic, Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and lecturer, and he's got two books out right now about Obama, Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, and of course, Obama, The Postmodern Coup. And as we're working on this Obama film here at the Info Warrior Studios, you know, I tend to like this guy less and less and less, and it does seem like there is a concerted effort to really promote him, not only through the media. I mean, it's bad enough that MSNBC was running commercials with all their anchors, change with MSNBC, on the cover of Spider-Man this week, sold out, Copies are going for upwards of $150. You can't get one less than $80. Cover of the Rolling Stone, Deified as a God. And now Newsweek even doing a cover article entitled Obama's Cheney Dilemma, where they make the case that the Obama administration should not get rid of any of the executive powers that were brought in under the Bush administration. Thank you for joining us, Webster.
Thank you, Jason. How are you?
I am good. I'm good. So, I mean, it really does seem like, you know, aside from the youth corps and aside from the media promoting him, that Obama's cult-like status is just growing and growing and growing. I mean, when I flew into Texas last week, you know, one of the guys with the big orange batons was wearing, you know, not a change Obama hat, not an Obama OA hat, but just one of these stylist fashion things that you can get in any mall now, because he's all over hats, he's all over t-shirts. I mean, there's an Obama line of shoes. It's pretty incredible.
Well, I think it's not encouraging for the future of democracy to have a personality cult on the model of the various totalitarians in Europe in the 1920s and 30s. Interestingly enough, the Washington Post has recognized that the classic Obama poster is directly out of Soviet communism, Italian fascism, and German National Socialism. And it's very interesting. The guy who does these things is Shepard Fairey. You've probably seen him. The cover of Time magazine was Shepard Fairey. The cover of Washington Life, another one of the same type. You've probably seen the one with Obama Hope underneath. Things like this. And the Washington Post, this is the first time they've admitted, because they've been supporting Obama, of course, because they're the house organ of the Federal Reserve System. It says, this branding is brilliant, but it seems to disregard the iconic precedents of authoritarian propaganda originating in forms such as the Soviet poster art of the 1920s that Americans have traditionally resisted. So you're being invited to join the personality cult of a demagogue who is he wants to become an authoritarian dictator, functioning differently than Bush. He's more demagogic. He's using left cover compared to Bush's right-wing arguments, right? Bush was talking Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, war on terror, 9/11. Bush was ranting about 9/11 last night in his farewell, which was quite a spectacle. But now with Obama, it's going to be different. Now it's going to be, as he says, the Washington Post headline of today, I think, is extremely ominous. It is that Obama is now pledged to loot and pillage and sack Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, with the goal, of course, of convoying that money not to the poor, but to Wall Street. He's doing it under the direction of former Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Adolf Volcker, Trilateral Commission, Carter administration, the guy who destroyed the U.S. industrial base with the worst usury in history, 22% prime rate. That's Volcker. He's the elder statesman, the eminence grise of this entire thing. And Obama says he wants to entitlement reform. That means that your economic rights, won by the American people and the American labor movement, with all kinds of struggles, the Detroit sit-down strikes, the San Francisco general strike, the Minneapolis Teamster strike, and the Toledo auto light, and a million other sung and unsung labor struggles over the years. Obama wants to take that all away, and he says this is where there are going to be very difficult choices and issues of sacrifice and responsibility and duty, he says. Sacrifice, responsibility, and duty. Now, this is not new. Michelle Obama, during the primaries, as I pointed out almost a year ago now, was talking a litany of sacrifice, meaning that they're going to drive down the standard of living. They're going to obviously increase the looting rate, increase the rate of primitive accumulation, including through taxation, of course, through their lunatic program of cap and trade, carbon tax, and all the rest of this stuff, motivated with global warming. And I'm sure the people up in Fargo, North Dakota, where it was 44 degrees below zero overnight, are going to laugh about that. The whole upper Midwest is in the deep freeze.
I'm getting calls from all my friends. They're just I'm from upstate New York, and they're like, dude, it's negative 15 out right now. And you just mentioned global warming and a carbon tax. Well, this week he appointed Carol M. Browner as his global warming czar. Yeah, I'm sorry, Carol M. Browner.
She's a lunatic. She's a retread from the Clinton administration. But this is a really big thing. He's saying that that he is capable of bringing together a bipartisan, what that really means is pan-oligarchical. He's going to get finance oligarchs of the left and finance oligarchs of the right, Republican and Democratic financiers, bankers, and so forth, and he's going to loot, he's going to reduce the benefits, he's going to increase the retirement age, he's going to increase the taxation on these things. And it's so ironic because last night, under Obama's leadership, the second round of the TARP was essentially approved, another $350 billion, and about half of it is already gone because it went to Bank of America overnight. Bank of America, a bankrupt institution, bankrupt because of derivatives, because of, you know, credit default swaps, collateralized debt obligations, structured investment vehicles, auction rate securities, asset-backed securities, mortgage-backed securities, all the rest of these crazy derivatives. Bank of America is bankrupt. Everybody knows it. Now, they've been bailed out once under the first round of the TARP to the tune of $25 billion. And now they're getting a second round of $168 billion following Citibank, right? Citibank had been bailed out once and then had to be bailed out twice in November. And everybody knows that Citibank is about to go under for the third time. And J.P. Morgan Chase is going down, 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 down. So along with Union Bank of Switzerland and all sorts of others that operate in the U.S., so this is a disaster. I think Obama has dropped the mask. Today he's talking about renewable energy and his green jobs. Well, the problem with what he calls renewable energy, meaning windmills and solar cells and ethanol and other boondoggles, essentially, that have to be subsidized, is that every time you build one, it's a net loss for the economy. It's a net loss because the amount of energy you have to put in to create some of these things, or all of them virtually, is more than you'll ever get out of it in the entire life of the investment. So the more you have green jobs and renewable energy, the poorer and more backward you're going to get. Obama today is talking about how countries like Spain are ahead of the United States. Yeah, they're ahead of the United States in the race to the bottom because they'll go bankrupt even faster because of their stress on green jobs, renewable energy, global warming, and the polar bears. So you're getting to the point now where human civilization, the fabric of human civilization, is at stake. And obviously, you can say, well, let the depression work. I suppose there are some who say, you can't interfere with the depression. You have to let it work itself out. You have to hope for creative destruction and hope for a recovery on the other side. I say, that's ridiculous. That's absurd, and it's also going to get a lot of people killed. We can and must and can easily fight the depression successfully, because we know how to do it, right? We have the examples of the 1930s, 1940s here in the United States. You can take the examples that work and the ones that don't work from the New Deal, the Roosevelt period, the labor struggles that go together with that, and you can apply that to the present time. What Obama's trying to do, though, he's essentially imitating, it's not very widely known, Mussolini. Mussolini in the 1930s, after he invaded Ethiopia, was slapped with oil sanctions by the League of Nations. So the Italian economy went into autarky, meaning energy independence, including ethanol. That's one of the ways that ethanol was developed, was in Italy in the late 1930s. And this, of course, is a tremendous failure, and it makes a society that is so impoverished and hysterical that you get yourself into wars very easily, because the dictator has then got to pick quarrels with foreign countries to somehow unload all of this tension. So I'm very much afraid we're going into 100 days to the fascist corporate state, and it is imperative now to organize a sophisticated, enlightened opposition to Obama. The problem you have, we can go through the Obama cabinet, right? The appointments that he's made, some of these are just hair-raising. I've already mentioned Volcker, but you look at people like Geithner and Summers and Gates and the new Dr. Rice and Vilsack at Agriculture, and Arnie Duncan, and this guy Donovan at the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and so on down the line. This is the greatest concentration of Wall Street banker influence and power that we've ever seen in the history of the country. There's nobody at the table except Wall Street. Labor counts for nothing. Retirees count for nothing. Women count for nothing. Black community counts for nothing. Hispanics count for nothing. Asians get nothing. Small business gets nothing. Heavy industry gets nothing. The defense contractors get basically nothing. Big oil gets virtually nothing. Auto, of course, gets nothing. So what you've got is the reign of pure financier paper-backed derivatives merchants. In other words, the people who have now they're now about to seize power in Washington are the ones behind the $1.5 quadrillion derivatives bubble. And God help us.
Well, they're calling for an $825 billion stimulus bill. We're in a lot of trouble, folks. It's the Alex Jones Show, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv. Starbucks wants to make it easy to join Obama's proposed paramilitary brown shirt volunteers. Starbucks will honor each person who pledges with a free tall brewed coffee beginning Wednesday, January 21st through the Sunday, January 25th. The goal of the effort is to raise pledges in excess of 1 million hours of service from all over the country for the new domestic Obama force. Well, thank you, Starbucks. The coffee I had was delicious, and I'm glad that you're pushing fascism. It's very nice of you. So, you know, this is just another effort, not only by the media, but to really get the people behind them. I mean, again, cover of Spider-Man. The Spider-Man comic sold out. I mean, people hoarded it. I can't get a copy for under $80. This is, you know, a $4 comic book, something that probably cost them 30 cents to make on a printing press. And, you know, of course, he's given the new cool guy bump with Spider-Man. He's the real hipster. And when I saw that, you know, we played the Obama Youth Brigade clip earlier. The Obama Youth Brigade clip, I mean, because of Obama, I can be the next engineer. Because of Obama, I can be the next architect. Well, how about pride in yourself? Why do you need a figure like Obama to do these things? And now the Democrats have proposed an $825 billion stimulus bill, one of many, I'm sure. I mean, Bernanke this week came out and said they're going to need more bailouts. Paulson from the very beginning said that banks were going to go under no matter what happened with these bailouts. So, Webster, what do you see happening in the next couple months? We're 6 days away from the inauguration. Do you see another bailout bill being passed? Do you see the stimulus bill going through? What's on the agenda?
The second round of the TARP just went through last night. So the second $350 billion, and that got Obama off the hook because Bush has now given all that money to Bank of America. Generally, the TARP is a monstrosity, and you ought to set up the criterion, not one penny more to banks, insurance companies, credit card companies, mutual funds, money markets, or any other financial institution. They were given the first round of the TARP, saying if they got that money, they would start lending again to business and industry. Well, we had General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler on the verge of bankruptcy. J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Citibank refused to lend to the automobile industry. The government had to come in and save them, which I support. You've absolutely got to save productive employment. Industrial assembly lines have got to be kept. Otherwise, you're in the Third World and the Banana Republic League, and you don't get out of it so easily. So the main idea is stop with the bailout of the derivatives bubble. It's futile. It's hopeless. There's not enough money in the world to ever bail out 1.5 quadrillion of poisonous, bloated, cancerous, fictitious, bloated derivatives, which are now the essence of the banking system. In other words, these banks, J.P. Morgan, Citibank, and Bank of America, they're all bankrupt. They should be seized. They shouldn't be demanding money. They should be in Chapter 11 and indeed in Chapter 7 because I think most of them are just hopeless economic black holes. Now, on the recovery program or stimulus program, I think there should be one. Well, let's ask ourselves, should the government fight the depression? Yeah, of course it should. You're damn right it should. The question is, with Obama, you've got a combination of only bailouts for bankers, no money for productive activity, and then his stimulus is basically green jobs, which I talked about before. Every green job is a net loss for the economy. You get deeper and deeper in the depression the more green you want. You've got to have modern technology. Probably 100 nuclear reactors, two in each state, would be the best energy policy. You'd want to build a transcontinental magnetic levitation railway. You'd want to put high-speed rail commuter systems around the 25 largest metropolitan areas. Either rebuild the ones you have, the ones in New York City are 100 years old, or in many places like Houston, there's nothing. So you start from scratch. Mm-hmm. So that would be another thing. But with Obama, it's partly green jobs, again, a net loss, and then he's got this stuff about community development grants. Now, that looks very much like funding things like ACORN and this fascist infrastructure. In other words, a series of parasitical organizations which are going to be used then to try to become a battering ram against other groups in the society that may disagree with the way that things are going. But the idea is, ultimately, this is a deindustrialized country. The deindustrialization was done under Paul Adolf Volcker. You got to roll that back. You've got to reconvert and reindustrialize. We're looking now very soon at a crisis of the dollar. That's obviously the next step, 3-6 months down the line. I can't tell when. Mm-hmm. But quite soon, as this $8 to $9 trillion, $10 trillion of injected capital begins to work its way through, you're going to see the dollar begin to fall against the euro and the yen. It's been falling against the yen the whole time. Against the euro, it's been actually increasing. And once you realize that the foreign value of the dollar is the value of the dollar, you're going to get into dollar hyperinflation. So you've got to do something about that. And that means you've got to earn foreign exchange to pay for the imports that you want. In other words, you won't be able to give funny pieces of green paper. You're going to have to earn the money or the gold to pay
for it. It's the Alex Jones Show. We'll be back with Webster Griffin Tarpley after this. Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. All right, folks, we are back. It is the Alex Jones Show. We're on the line with Webster Griffin Tarpley, the author of Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. Let's not forget George H.W. Bush, The Unauthorized Biography either. And, of course, Obama, The Postmodern Coup. You can get that over at Infowars.com right now. I want to shift gears just a little bit and talk about whether or not you believe that we'll have military conscription under this new administration. I mean, you've got Rahm Emanuel talking about 18 to 25. Everybody serves 3 months in basic training, and then you're in the military. We now have Charlie Rangold reintroducing legislation to bring in the draft, and then you have Thomas Blankley, who's been talking about this now for 2 years, and, you know, talked about on MSNBC, said it wasn't the right time under the Bush administration. They'd have to wait for a new administration. And now he released his book, American Grit, this week, goes on Fox and Friends. And, of course, he doesn't like it, but we're just going to need the draft for these emerging military threats in the Middle East. And one of those would happen to be Pakistan. And, Webster, you were one of the first people to actually talk about this Pakistani threat. So do you think that we will see conscription in this country?
Let me say, first of all, that people who went through 2008 talking about an attack on Iran, there was no attack on Iran. There will be no attack on Iran, and the Israelis have been told that they're not allowed to attack Iran. So they've been essentially banned from attacking Iran. I think there's certainly a big push towards what amounts to compulsory militias, compulsory service masquerading as volunteer service. Here we have Colin Powell wants everybody to carry out volunteer service to celebrate Martin Luther King Day. I really wonder whether Volcker, Geithner, Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase, Blankfein from Goldman Sachs, Mac over at Morgan Stanley, Larry Summers from the White House, I really wonder if Rahm Emanuel is going to be out there carrying out volunteer service. And I doubt it. And the military side of it is perfectly possible. And I think what you see now is a kind of gloating in the ruling class that they now have a whole series of options that had been foreclosed during the late Bush years because of the fact that Bush was so discredited and so hated and so isolated that they couldn't get away with those things. And obviously the military draft is one side of it. And he would bring that in under left cover. He'd say, we have a humanitarian emergency in Darfur in Sudan. The Burmese government is oppressive. The Pakistanis are harassing women. So it would be now a series of invasions conducted under left cover rather than under the worn-out, discredited cliches of 9/11. So I think all that's possible. The other obvious possibility is the false flag option. And remember the famous or infamous speech by Joe Biden in Seattle on October 19th. There's going to be a foreign affairs crisis in the first 6 months. It's going to be ginned up, generated, fake the righteousness of the U.S. position will not be obvious. Got to support Barkey. And then the other one, the 12-month perspective, that the economic policies of the new administration, obviously now based on austerity, sacrifice, lowering the standard of living, wage gouging, taking away various economic rights under left cover, that that would make the whole Obama team so hated that their standing in the polls will have collapsed within 12 months, which based on the model of Jimmy Carter, I think is about right. And actually, I think it'll go even faster this time around. So they've got all of these things going. And I, of course, urge people, don't suspend your critical judgment. Don't have your, autonomous judgment as a citizen taken away by this hysteria, this hype, the messianic utopian rhetoric. The inaugural address will be a tissue of lies. And as a matter of fact, let me ask people to, if you have a chance, tomorrow afternoon, starting at 2 o'clock Eastern, you can, on this same network, Genesis, you can go over to my program, the World Crisis Radio. I recorded, just in the past couple of hours, a counter-inaugural, counter-State of the Union, where I go through an economic recovery program to fight the Depression, a program for world peace, a program of institutional reform. Just listen to that, and you'll get the whole lowdown on the way that I see things. But the important thing now is to have an opposition. If Obama comes forward with a bailout of $850 billion, it simply will not do to stand around in the corner saying, I want the free market, I want the free market. It's like saying, I want Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, and the Easter Bunny to come and save me, because this stuff just doesn't exist. It's nowhere to be found in the world. We live in a world of monopoly cartels, trusts, oligopolies, duopolies, you name it. There's no free market. There never really has been in centuries. If you talk about free market and say you think that the government ought to let the Depression take its course, this basically puts you in the deep freeze. It puts you off the political map. What you've got to be able to do is have the sophistication to get in there and distinguish between the things that Obama will have in his programs that are good and that ought to be in there. He'll say, more money for food stamps. Yes, 10 times as much as Obama wants. He'll say, more money for unemployment benefits. 52 weeks, 104 weeks. Yes, 10 times as much as Obama wants. And then he'll say, green jobs and green energy. No. Then he'll say, community development block grants for Acorn. No. So that you get in there and actually grapple with these problems rather than retreating into some ivory tower of a world that has not existed and certainly does not exist now. You've got to get in there and be able to fight, point by point, as Obama says, right? He's got a woman called Killifer. I suppose she's going to be Madame Killjoy or Madame Killer. Killifer is the performance officer of the administration. We can avoid all the obvious jokes about that, but the performance officer is that she's supposed to go through the federal budget line by line and find out the things that are not necessary. So she's going to be the new cap the knife, right? The new austerity czar and budget deficit hawk. And the kind of thing that somebody like this is going to do to Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and to all the other, remnants that we have of our tattered social safety net. This is going to be an absolute tragedy. But again, you've got to be able to get in there and fight point by point. You've got to get in there and grapple. And I hope that people will join in that, right? You can see some ideas for it are at actindependent.org website.
Well, going back to you talking about left cover and how we're going to, have this possible conscription, don't you think that he's still using just a little bit of the right cover with the war on terror? I mean, first of all, Bush in his, maybe not in his farewell speech, but his last media appearance, he said that his number one thing was keeping America safe from another terrorist attack.
Right.
That'll be the number one thing for the Obama administration. And the Obama administration is already talking about really a redistribution of force from Iraq. Of course, we're de-escalating there, but he says he's going to put them into Afghanistan. So
right.
I see them creating the same quagmire
there.
The
only place in the world, that they still talk about bin Laden, Al Qaeda, is this area where Obama and Biden claim that bin Laden lives. Remember, mm-hmm. That was the line in Obama's convention speech was Bush says he'll go to the end of the earth to get Osama bin Laden, but he won't go to the cave where he lives. Meaning, let's invade Pakistan. Now, other than that, you're not going to see, I doubt they're going to claim that bin Laden is now living in Sudan or Burma or Venezuela or China or Russia, for that matter. The geography and locus of confrontation has shifted. They're going to go after Pakistan with the goal of dividing it up, right? Remember, it's Balochistan, Pashtunistan, Waziristan, Sindh, Punjab, tribal areas. The idea is to shatter it into mini-states, right? Mini-states, micro-states, regionalism. And the general model is they're against big government. They don't like big government. The government of Islamabad is big government. They don't like it. They want to have mini-states and above that, the empire. That's the new model. And they have India now as a relatively willing spear point against that until somebody in India does something about it. But if you look at the past 6 months, Brzezinski and company have already been dictating policy. In other words, Bush and Cheney left power long ago. They have not been calling the shots for at least a year. And what has happened, of course, is Georgia attacks Russia, straight Brzezinski Soros foreign policy. Ukraine has just cut the gas deliveries from Russia to Europe, which I'd been predicting for, what, 4 or 5 months, since August at least, that there would be a natural gas crisis created by these NATO IMF puppets in Kiev, the Yushchenko regime. So they're trying to gin that up. And then behind that, remember, is the Polish missile crisis. And again, that's supposedly got to do with Iran. But I think you're going to see that the 9/11 stuff gets to be less and less relevant for all areas other than Pakistan, which, of course, is important, and you're going to get more into this area of great power rivalry. And I think the great danger is, of course, that there'll be some new false flag that will essentially change the subject. In other words, it will be, Bin Laden has joined the KGB, or Bin Laden has joined the Beijing secret police or something, and now he's operating for them, right? Mm-hmm. Some form of this legion of super villains or something like this, and then try to use that. But the main idea is that you can't muck around in the Middle East. Again, the fact that there has been no attack on Iran. Notice, Biden went to the Israelis and said, guess what, Israelis? There's going to be a nuclear Iran, and you're going to like it, and you're going to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the caller that you had at the beginning of the hour wants to know about Gaza, of course. It's an orgy of genocide by the Israelis, and it has to be stopped. The one person who could stop it is Obama. Obama could simply make a statement, I call on the Israeli government to stop what they're doing. At that point, the Israeli government would probably collapse and the operation would cease. Notice he doesn't do this. The reason is that the attack on Gaza is a kind of a consolation prize for people like Zippy Livni and Ehud Barak, who want to be the successors of Olmert. They want to compete with Netanyahu as warmongers. So they've been given this opportunity. They're told, go in and kill 1,000 or 2,000 people, and then you can run on that, and you can compete with Netanyahu because you're not going to be allowed to attack Iran. And there's a constant flow of news stories that the Israelis were pressing and asking, and the answer kept being no, 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 and that came from Gates, it came from Mullen, and it came from the U.S. administration in general because the U.S. and the British just don't want this. They want to look at Pakistan. And again, Pakistan is an energy corridor. Pakistan is the way that Iranian oil could go overland to China. Pakistan is a way that tankers could unload at the port of Gwadar and send oil up to Pakistan all the way into China above the Himalayas, above Kashmir and so forth. So it's an energy corridor. Pakistan has got to be destroyed, not because of Pakistan, but because it's an ally of China. And we're now in the area of Russia, China, Shanghai Cooperation Organization. That's the new enemies list. So, generally speaking, kick the Chinese out of Africa, attack Sudan to cut off the oil from there, attack Zimbabwe somehow to prevent the Chinese from getting minerals from there, attack anybody in Africa who's dealing with the Chinese, attack Pakistan, attack Burma. These are all Chinese allies. And then ultimately try to play China against Russia. So this is the perspective that they have, and they will need to evolve the ideology because you can't come forward sounding like Bush, Cheney, neocons. You've got to sound like something new. Generally speaking, I think they'll talk much more about human rights and genocide, Darfur, Burma, places like this. I think that's the wave of the future.
All right, let's take some callers in the last 15 minutes of the show. Let's try to keep it on topic. And for Webster Tarpley, let us go to Matt in Ohio. Matt, what's on your mind?
Hi, Jason. Thanks for taking my call. And hi, Mr. Tarpley.
Hello.
I had my first question was Do you have, which one of your books discusses, gives some groundwork for your economic plans?
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's called Surviving the Cataclysm. And the second edition will come out from Progressive Press of California within a month or two, or something like that. We meant to do this a year ago, but then along came Obama, and I had to shift into overdrive to try to warn people about Obama, right? Two books in about 5 or 6 months. But there is a second edition now that's practically in the press of Surviving the Cataclysm. You can send an email to info@progressivepress.com and get on the list and be informed of this. Or and I think you can, he'll probably even sell you a an electronic version, which is going to be a little bit messy, but it may be the thing. And that was the basic story there. That was written about 10 years ago. And it talks about deindustrialization and the derivatives bubble as leading towards a world economic depression of unprecedented severity. And that's where we are now. So that was 10 years before.
Okay. The reason why I ask is because I'm pretty much a free markets adherent. And I've heard you talk about, you're on another radio program about a week or two ago, and you don't seem to really think the free market would work in this situation. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to get some of your, fortunately, I haven't drinking enough fluoride to not be willing to question my assumptions. So I wanted to get some, you know, just some groundwork just to, you know, to relook at that analysis.
Well, definitely check it out because, you know, Webster, again, you put it out there 10 years ago and right now, 10 years later is when a second edition is warranted. And I'm sure would you add a couple chapters? Basically.
Yeah, sure. There's a new economic program. There's a new analysis of helicopter Ben Bernanke. There's a new analysis of the TARP. How to nationalize the Federal Reserve if you don't have the political power to nationalize it all at once? Nationalize the Fed by stages, and they would seize parts of it and fight from there, and then use those parts to overcome the other parts. The thing about free market is that this is a myth. This does not exist. The 19th century generally knew that the subject you're talking about is political economy. In other words, it's economics and the state, economics and the government. And the only time that you don't have that is if you're in the old Stone Age, right? If you're in the Paleolithic hunting and gathering caveman phase when there's no state, then you could call that a market, I suppose, but that's basically hunting and gathering. Since the emergence of the state in any form, about 10,000 B.C., right, when you go into the Neolithic, right, the New Stone Age, then you've already got some kind of a state coming up, and then you're talking about political economy. So the idea that you talk about economics as if there's no government is crazy. All of this grows out of Ricardo. The founder of monetarist economics is David Ricardo, who was on the board of directors of the British East India Company, and he ran opium, and he ran the monster debt of the British after the Napoleonic Wars. And from there it goes on to Oxford, and then it goes on to Vienna, and the various people from Vienna you know. And the thesis of that school is that production is impossible, that there's no such thing as production that creates something qualitatively new in the universe, but only rearranging things in space. It's a crazy thesis. You find that in von Mises' book of 1912, his main theoretical treatise. So what you need is industrial economics. And this is a school that never mentions the word production. They don't talk about production. They talk about money supply and all the rest of this. It's basically up in a never-never land. In other words, it's profoundly unrealistic. Why we should turn from the American school of Hamilton and Lincoln and Franklin D. Roosevelt, which is the most successful in the world, to the Austrian school, which is a failure. I mean, is Austria a model of economic success? I don't think so. But America was and could be again.
All right, it's the Alex Jones Show. We're going to continue to take your calls in the last 10 minutes of the program. If you missed any of the broadcasts today, remember, we rebroadcast everything over at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. Final segment of the Alex Jones Show. Yesterday we played a really quick clip of the FX program Rescue Me, where Daniel Sinjata, big ups to Daniel, had a 2.5-minute tirade for 9/11 Truth, and it was just awesome. Well, there's a new FX program that premiered last night called The Beast, and they slander 9/11 Truth in that. They have a 9/11 truther come on. He starts talking a little bit of truth, but then they bring in the wacky no planes, CGI planes, butter planes theory in there. And really, and this is the guy that, I guess the guy is like the crack smoker on the program. He shot himself in the foot while trying to play Russian roulette. So the major idiot of the program is pro 9/11 truth and talking ridiculous CGI theories. We have Webster Griffin Tarpley with us, and he is the author of Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, and of course, Obama, the postmodern coup. You can get that over at Infowars.com. And we're going to fly through your calls right now for Webster Griffin Tarpley. Let's go to Chad, who's out in very cold Albany, New York. Chad, what's on your mind?
Hey, Jason, how are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good. I got 2 points. Try to make them quick. Mm-hmm. Rahm Emanuel's plan to make it compulsory to do national service, whatever that means, mm-hmm. that would have to be approved by Congress first. They couldn't just backdoor that through an executive order, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And the second thing is,
they have the votes.
Right.
Yeah, they do.
Although, would it really, I wouldn't put it past Congress to pass that, because they have the huge majority now, and they worship the ground Obama walks on, so any idea he comes up with must be brilliant, right?
Yeah, and the House, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, is a total hawk. You know, she's been in with this, not only the Bush administration, but this administration for quite some time. She headed up the initial congressional investigation. She was the lead Democrat of 9/11. And, you know, Pelosi is not a good person, is she, Webster?
No, she's a monster, and she ought to be out. But remember, these people are totalitarians in the sense that they believe, whether they know it or not, what they believe in is the Mussolini fascist corporate state, and they believe in forms of national mobilization such as the so-called voluntary labor service that we saw in Germany in the 1930s, which was not voluntary at all. So the point is, the ability to get this stuff through is, I think, going to be largely concentrated in 100 days. In other words, from January 20th to about May 1st, you got to try to fight a holding action. If you can stop Obama in the 100 days, after that he will crater, as Biden predicted. In other words, his economics will be so unpopular that he'll be hated within a very few months, and at that point it'll become much harder for him to get this stuff through. So what you want to do ultimately is gridlock. Gridlock and partisanship, and stop this stuff from going through. And I urge everybody to mobilize now as you've never mobilized before, between January 20th and May 1st. If you can stop some of the most monstrous things from going through, it'll be harder and harder as time goes on for Obama to get it. But you've got to be able to withstand this initial stormtrooper stuff that's going to be thrown at you with the hysteria that Jason was talking about, you know, this array of products and, you know, hero worship, personality cultism, you know, groupies and all the rest.
Yeah, get the Obama collector plate and the Obama collector coin. I mean, they've all got them. Thank you for the call, Chad. Let's jump to Ken in Georgia. Ken, last caller. What's on your mind?
Hi. Webster, your podcast is really awesome, and I encourage people to listen to it. College credit for listening to it.
I don't have any college credit to give. I'm sorry.
Quickly, Ken. What's your point?
Okay. There's an article today from Kurt Nemo about the Pentagon paper that said they were equating, well, not equating, but saying Mexico and Pakistan could collapse. And then not presented, but there was a video out there that where a Mexican broadcaster.
Talking about the collapse of Mexico, I got to let you go just because we're in the last 30 seconds of the program.
The existence of the United States of America is a historical achievement of the First Water, and don't let little George Bush sour you on it. So no subversion, no secessionism, territorial integrity, constitutional government, and economic recovery. And fight for it through the organs of government that we have in our Constitution.